from exhaustion, buried in the hail, poisoned in the bushes and blown out on the trail, hunted like a crocodile, ravaged in the corn. Come in, she said, I'll give you shelter from the storm.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. Yesterday, labor leaders and activists gathered together at Queens College in New York City for the Labor at the Crossroads Conference.
There is a crisis in America for working people.
Bruce Rayner, general president of Unite Here, spoke as part of a panel discussion on revitalizing the labor movement.
28 million people go to work every day in this country today and live in poverty. Not people unemployed, but people who work. In the last 4 years, George Bush has presided over the loss of 2.9 million manufacturing jobs. More jobs lost in those 4 years than the previous 22 years.
During the noon hour, union members picketed a Verizon wireless store in Midtown Manhattan, highlighting the cell phone carrier's illegal anti-union tactics.
Basically, what Verizon Wireless is doing is attempting to pressure out the union.
Laverne Conley was a Verizon Wireless employee for 2.5 years before she was fired for encouraging her coworkers to fight for collective bargaining rights.
My biggest concern was just a respectable work environment where people came in every day and as long as they were doing a good job, knew they had a job the next day.
The conference continues through today.
Michigan's Democratic governor plans to remove same-sex partner benefits from contracts negotiated with state workers. An aide to Governor Jennifer Granholm says that benefits are being removed because voters passed an amendment on November 2nd that bans gay marriage and similar unions. The contracts will be adopted on December 15th. Granholm aide David Fink says that if the courts resolve the issue of same-sex benefits before the contracts take effect on October 1, 2005, then they could be reinserted. After Granholm spoke at the Democratic National Convention, many characterized her as a rising star in the party.
800 General Motors workers in Linden, New Jersey face an uncertain future as GM ends operations there 2 years earlier than planned. But at least they won't be hurting for wages between now and the originally planned phase-out of plant operations. Because they have income protection built into their contracts, the 800 union workers will get paid 95% of their wages for 48 weeks while on unemployment. After that, they'll collect their full salaries while doing community service work, right up to the September 2007 date when production of the Chevy Blazer and Jimny SUVs was originally set to end. Here's today's Dow Bob report. The consumer price index was up by 0.6% for October, 3.2% higher than October of 2003. Energy costs led the increase in the cost of living for working families, rising 4.2% over a year ago. Food prices are also higher. Many of the necessities working families must buy, including gasoline, food, and heating oil, are all more expensive, and this comes at a time when real worker wages have declined. Inflation for the first 10 months of this year rose at an annual rate of 3.9%, according to the consumer price index.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Are you tired of progressives spending all their energy on defensive struggles where victory simply maintains the status quo? We are too, and we're doing something about it. At ReclaimDemocracy.org, we're taking the initiative to revoke corporate power and restore citizen authority over corporations to enable genuine progress on the many issues that we all care about. Get involved. Visit us online at ReclaimDemocracy.org or call 406-582-1224.
Why is it that when George W. says he's going to reform something, I instinctively want to grab my money, my liberties, my family, and flee to the woods? For the Bushites, the word reform means deform, to monkey wrench the system so the rich get richer and the rest of us get stooked. Still, there's one system crying out for real reform, the bankruptcy process that corporations are using to stiff their employees, letting CEOs simply walk away from binding contracts on wages, health care, and pensions. At present, the big abusers are United, U.S. Air, Delta, and other major airlines that have been poorly managed and now are being squeezed by their bankers and jet fuel suppliers. Screaming poverty, these airlines have rushed a bankruptcy court, demanding that judges allow them to abrogate legitimate contracts they had negotiated in good faith with their pilots, flight attendants, mechanics, and others. These are loyal, long-time, hard-working employees who already have made concession after concession, giving back billions of dollars that were owed to them. Yet the CEOs are demanding still more, using the federal bankruptcy law as their weapon for this mugging. This one-sided law apparently legalizes end runs to let corporations weasel out of their obligations. What an interesting lesson for all of us who've been taught that a contract is sacrosanct, a legally binding giving of one's word. Here's my question. Why do the CEOs only target the workers for cost-cutting? Why not tell Exxon and the other fuel suppliers, no, we can't pay your gouging prices, so we're abrogating those commitments? Or why not say to the super wealthy bankers, you take some of the pain too? Why do they only pound their workers? This is Jim Hightower saying, I don't know about you, but on my flights, I'd rather have a disgruntled banker or fuel supplier than an angry pilot, flight attendant, or mechanic. It's time to fix the bankruptcy law that has legalized the corporate robbery of workers.
Your oldest has just turned driving age. Time to add them to your policy. So you get in your car, drive down to your insurance company. Hunt for a space, double park, get a parking ticket, get in a fight with the meter maid, get thrown in jail, meet a guy named Wally. Wait a minute. This is just a bad dream. You've got GEICO. You don't have to drive anywhere. You can do all that car insurance stuff online. Oh, that was a close one.
GEICO's customer satisfaction stands at 97%. How would you rate your car insurance company? GEICO. Online at GEICO.com.
It's night. You have heartburn. You want fast relief. Zantac works fast. When first used, Prilosec OTC works not so fast. Zantac works right when you need it.
Hello, relief.
Prilosec's label says it may take 1 to 4 days to fully work. So, what would you choose?
Estimated time of relief, 1 to 4 days.
Prilosec, nah. Zantac's for people who hate to wait, especially at night. Use a directive.
Uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live on radio stations from California to North Carolina, beaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system, streaming around the planet on radiopower.org with archives at whiterosesociety.org and at tomhartman.com. If you want to drop into our live chat room, already well populated, just hit tomhartman.com and click live chat. It's the first hour of our Friday program. It's time for our Brunch with Bernie segment. Congressman Bernie Sanders, in 1991, was first elected as the first independent congressman in 40 years to the United States House of Representatives. He's since been reelected. Is it seven times now, Bernie?
Seven times, yep.
Seven times. I've got to update this bio here. He's the longest-serving independent in the history of the House of Representatives. His website is www.bernie.house.gov. And if you'd like to ask questions of or be on the air with or take issue with or whatever, Congressman Bernie Sanders, our telephone number is 1-866-889-8894. And welcome to the program, Bernie.
Good to be with you, Tom.
I got to tell you, it was wonderful seeing you on Wednesday night there at the Meetup for Democracy, or the Meetup, what is it, Democracy for America Meetup,
yep.
In Burlington, where first Howard Dean, Governor Dean, came in and spoke, and then you came in and just did a marvelous job. And you made some really important points in that, and I shared some of them on the air with our listeners yesterday. Is there any message, as you go around to these things now in this post-election time, what is the main message that you're carrying out that you think people need to
hear? The main message is this. We are up against some very tough opponents, and clearly the major opponent is the big money interests who have unfathomable amounts of money. I mean, they own the printing presses, and they can spend as much money as they want. To a significant degree, they own the media. They have enormous control over Congress. And that's the power of money in this country. And what has happened over the last 20 or 30 years is an alliance has been developed between those groups and a lot of evangelical fundamentalist groups where I think very, very sadly, lower income and working class people who go to these evangelical churches end up voting against their own interest in many, many respects, and so forth. So you have a very powerful moneyed interest tied in with a strong grassroots national organization or networks. And I think the only way to effectively combat that is to understand, as they do, that politics is not just something that happens 2 weeks before an election or a month before an election. It goes on 365 days a year. And we've got to change the political culture. And by that, I mean people have got to be thinking politically. They have to be communicating on a regular basis. And they have to go out there outside of their comfort zone. You know, Tom, as I talk about very often, all of us have friends. And almost by definition, in most cases, what a friend is somebody who shares your worldview. And everyone, you know, sit around, you moan and groan, and you talk about this. But it is important in politics to go beyond that. Talk to people who have disagreements with you. Get into serious discussions with people who may differ with you on this or that point of view. So that's, I think, the main message that I've been trying to get out.
Yeah, and you did a great job of that on Wednesday night. Just a couple of quick news things I'd love to have your thoughts on, your comments on. Let me just run through three real quickly, and you can take a shot at them, and then we can go to the phones. Our number, by the way, 1-866-889-8894. Number one, in Michigan, the Republican-controlled Michigan Congress today is going to vote on, today, this afternoon, is going to vote on eliminating Social Security, or Social Studies, excuse me, Social Studies, as a part of their testing. In other words, they want to make sure the kids know about math and science, but they don't care if they understand about democracy or how government works. And the email I got here from Harry in Michigan, he says they think single party rule is here, and they plan to do all they can to make it single party rule for a long time. With stunts like this, they want to keep the populace in the dark about how government works and unaware of their economic interests. The second, Governor Mike Johans, the guy who has been proposed as Bush Agriculture Secretary, apparently is a longtime advocate of overturning Nebraska's ban on corporate farming. And the family farmers in Nebraska are pretty terrified of him. He's apparently going to be our agriculture secretary. And then this thing about the Bush administration manipulating the news with regard to Fallujah and the news media.
Right.
You want to take a bite at any one of those three?
Well, they're all very interesting, and they all tie in, I think, just a moment ago to what I'm talking about. In terms of developing strong, in terms of what the Republican Party and the moneyed interest and their allies are doing, certainly an attack on education is very, very important. Ultimately, in my view, these guys would like to privatize public education and destroy it and move us toward private schools and religious education rather than public education. If we have public education, it'll just be underfunded and therefore maybe lower income people. So what does this tell us? It tells us that people at all levels have got to get actively involved in the fight to make sure that we have strong and good quality, high quality, well-funded public education in America. The idea of not putting a strong emphasis on social studies, on our history, on how people can actively participate in a democracy is clearly an outrage. One of the depressing aspects of my job is you go out very often, and people who have problems don't see the connection between politics and government and their problems.
Right.
And let me tell you, if you de-emphasize social studies in Michigan, that's going to continue.
Yeah.
In terms of the new appointee for Secretary of Agriculture, clearly the crisis in agriculture right now is that not only in dairy, which impacts my state of Vermont, but in almost every commodity, small family-based farmers are up against tremendous odds, whether it's Idaho, the potatoes, or whatever it may be. We're seeing the decline of family-based agriculture. We're seeing more and more agricultural production resting in the hands of these big corporate agribusiness firms. And the bottom line there, if we don't reverse that process, what we're going to end up seeing is the control, is the production and distribution of food in this country resting in a few corporate hands. And I think that that is going to be a disaster for our country. Now, interesting on the third issue you're talking about, and that is how the military misled CNN, I think it was.
Yeah, it was.
In Fallujah. is a very serious issue, and you're seeing this every single day. This deals with civil liberties. This deals with civil rights. This deals with an administration that does not pay a whole lot of attention to the truth. So in this instance, they used CNN to try to mislead the opposition, in the people who are fighting in Iraq. But I think that article also indicated that they may well be misleading the American people.
Yeah.
And obviously it's hard to have a real democracy if our government is not telling us the truth, which makes it all the more important that people get actively involved in the fight for grassroots media, for shows like your own, which present a different point of view than Rush Limbaugh's and the company line, so to speak. But this is... And this ties into this other thing of CBS and NBC. You may have read just the other day, they did not put an ad on from, I think it was the United Church of Christ.
That's right, yeah.
Because they were welcoming all types of people into their church. It ties into the fact that the NAACP, I gather, is being investigated by the IRS and might lose their tax-exempt status because Julian Bond, the president of the NAACP, spoke out, you know, against President Bush. So all of these civil liberties, civil rights issues, these attacks on education, are part of what our opponents are waging. And we've got to engage them.
Amen.
We've got to engage them at every level.
Well said. Okay, let's go to the phones. 1-866-889-8894. Telephone number. Glenn in Tulsa, Oklahoma is on the line. Hey, Glenn, welcome to the program. You're live with Congressman Bernie Sanders.
Good morning, Tom and Bernie. When I watch, and I agree with everything you've been talking about, he's almost answered my question, but when you started... And I'm wondering about the giant mass of people, maybe almost half the people out there who didn't vote. And yes, we need to talk to people, but also in the coverage, the election was it's talked about as if those people didn't exist. 51% of the country voted for Bush, 49% voted for Kerry. Well, yeah, but 70% of the people didn't vote for Bush, if you count those who didn't vote at all. And I know that probably a lot of them share our views. Even a lot of Bush voters share Democratic views on an individual basis. They just voted with their limbic brain instead of their intellect.
Right. So what's your question, Glenn?
Well, what do we...
Okay, what do we do?
What do we do? That's a good one. There you go.
I mean, that's a very basic question, and it may seem naive, but it's not a naive question. It is the $64 question in many respects. So what's the answer, Glenn? The answer is we have to appreciate, for example, that every week in Washington, D.C., people like Grover Norquist, who is a right-wing organizer, very effective, who has a lot of money behind them, sits down with all kinds of different grassroots organizations, and they plan out their activities for the week. And then we have to appreciate that on Sundays, all across America, in many respects, many millions of people are going not just to church, but they're going to political meetings as well. And we have got to figure out a way to counteract that. One of the sad aspects of what Glenn just said is that most of the people who don't vote are lower income people who don't have health care, who are earning poor wages, who have minimal retirement benefits. And that means that people are going to have to reach out to low income communities, get involved in voter registration, but more importantly, reach out, engage people in whatever way you can, and work with those people. I mean, there's no magical answer. This has been a problem time immemorial, and it deals with education and organization and making people aware of where their interests lie.
Step by step.
Yep. No magical answer. But it requires a lot of work, and sometimes it is very, very tough work. And as you know, anyone who knows history, I mean, you think back, and I know, Tom, you spend a lot of time talking about history, and that's great, because people have got to understand that things like civil rights, women's rights, workers' rights, you know, they didn't just pop up out of nowhere.
Yeah, and they didn't come from the top down either.
They surely did not. You know, and there were people working on those issues for 100 years.
Yeah, they came from the bottom up. 1-866-889-8894. Rick in Grand Rapids. Rick, we've only got about a minute left in this segment. If it's a quickie, otherwise I can hold you over.
Okay, I'll try to be quick. Nice to hear you guys. Nice to have you out there advocating for progressive ideas. But I just wanted to run this by both you guys. I was watching Fox News last night and Hannity and Combs. And Hannity was bringing up this old mantra about rich people. He was mentioning a certain movie actor. I forget the guy's name now, Matt Damon, maybe.
Yeah.
About how these folks say, well, we don't really need a tax cut. And then Hannity comes back with this response, well, these rich people, be they movie stars or anybody else, they're perfectly free to give their money back to the government, and why don't they do so? Now, I think what we should do as liberals is we should flip that around and talk to these folks that are so pro-war and ask them why they didn't enlist or why they don't send their sons and daughters into the army so they can fight over in Iraq.
That's a good one. We'll get Bernie's comments on that right after this break. Rick, thanks for the call and thanks for the comment. I appreciate it. 20 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. You're in the real free speech zone. No barbed wire cages here, just good conversation. Stick around.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Real novelists don't go to graduate school, they go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small-town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor. Palasek's books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Can you imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives? Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Ecolonomics. And to learn more, just pull up DennisWeaverNow.com and learn how to get a free report of our Ecolonomics educational program and how together we can build a world of prosperity without pollution. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com.
Who is it?
Special delivery.
Who?
Pizza man.
Hey, you're not the pizza man. You're the cable guy again.
Price patrol.
No, you're not. I can see your van. You're the cable company. I'm not going to let you raise my rates again. I'm calling American Satellite to get a DirecTV system.
Presidential candidate.
Are you going to offer me over 125 digital quality channels for as little as $39.99 a month, including my local channels?
Ice cream man.
Yeah, like that's going to work. If I call American Satellite right now, I can get a four-room DirecTV system, including professional installation free. Can you beat that?
Pizza man.
You already tried that. Well, that's it. I'm calling to get my DirecTV system.
Call 800-505-1546. That's 800-505-1546. For new customers only. Annual programming commitment required. Ask how you can get your first 6 months for only $29.99 a month, a $60 value. Offer ends July 17th. Call now. 800-505-1546.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
Ain't you glad you got nothing to fear?
Welcome back. 24 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. It's our Brunch with Bernie segment. Congressman Bernie Sanders with us. And we have some calls for you, Bernie. 1-866.
We had Rick's question.
Oh, that's right. Thank you very much for keeping me on track here. Go for it.
Okay. And I wanted to mention that. Actually, it's funny that Rick should mention that, because a couple of years ago, Sean Hannity and I had a screaming match on his radio show just on that issue. And here's the story. Sean Hannity and his friends do a fantastic job in representing millionaires and billionaires, and they do it in very clever ways. But here's the bottom line. There are, number one, the Bush administration has given hundreds of billions of dollars in tax breaks to millionaires and billionaires, and yet in America today, poverty is increasing. There are millions of families who are unable to afford child care for their kids, quality child care. The number of people who now go to food banks or to emergency food shelves is increasing, and the gap between the rich and the poor is growing wider. What Hannity wants to see, and he is seeing it, is this country move toward oligarchy, where a small number of very, very wealthy people control almost all aspects of our lives and, in fact, have incredible wealth. That's what Hannity wants, and that's what he is seeing. And part of that provision is to give huge tax breaks to the people on top. And I think that that is a disaster for democracy, and it's a disaster for the fabric of what this country is about. And I think that, in fact, not only should we not be giving tax breaks to billionaires, but we should be asking them to pay their fair share of taxes so that we can make sure that every man, woman, and child in this country has at least a minimal standard of living and does not have to go to an emergency food shelf or sleep out on the street or not have the health care that they need.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, and that's really what the issue. What kind of America do you want? And where we are moving with people like Hannity leading us is into an oligarchy, which will look like one of these third world countries with a few people on top who have almost everything and a very small middle class.
Yeah. The thing that makes me absolutely crazy is occasionally, you know, driving around here, he's one of the only stations you can get. And he goes into these riffs about, you know, it's your money. Don't you want to keep more of it? And completely ignoring the fact that we have entered into, by maintaining our citizenship as citizens of the United States, by not leaving this country, we have entered into a social contract with each other to fund things like our roads and our police and our fire departments and our social safety net. And that once we have entered into that contract, it isn't our money. The tax dollars. It's just like if you walk into a store and you pick up a loaf of bread and you walk up to the counter and say, well, you know, it's my money. I think I'll just keep it in my pocket, and you walk out of the store. It doesn't work that way. And these Republicans are trying to make it work that way by saying, well, we'll borrow from our grandparent, from our grandchildren, and then we'll tell you it's your money. You can keep it. And it's just, it's electioneering. It's a lie.
It's more than that. It is doing away with the whole basis of what we call society.
Yeah.
And moving toward social Darwinism, which says, hey, I've got everything and you've got nothing, and that's the way life goes. And I don't think that is the kind of country that a vast majority of Americans want to be part of. I think people want to care about each other. They want to make sure that people who are hurting have at least a minimal standard of benefit and not end up in an oligarchy-type situation. But that's the fight we're up against.
Yeah, well said. 1-866-889-8894. Dave in Columbus. Dave, we've got about a minute again. I'm sorry, we have another break coming up here. But what's up?
Hey, Tom. Barry, good to talk to you guys again.
Good.
Can you guys hear me?
Yeah, sure. What's on your mind, Dave?
Okay. I just wanted to say something about this education thing. You guys jumped out to a conclusion that I think is probably going to turn out to be inaccurate on this. Specifically, the thing going on in Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
In all likelihood, what's being pushed there as far as eliminating the one subject from the testing is probably coming from the schools and the teachers' union, because the schools are having, particularly the public schools, are having a difficult time teaching the kids the various subjects.
Well, it may be. And the note that I have is that it's coming from the Republican Party.
I guarantee you that's what it is. And they're hammering the legislators to make it easier for them to pass these tests.
We'll see. We'll find out. This is House Bill number 6344, introduced we'll find out. Good point, Dave. We'll track it down. Thanks for the call.
Okay.
I appreciate it. 29 minutes past the hour. We'll be right back.
You've heard his story 1,000 times. A troubled youth runs away from home. becomes a huge international superstar. But this is not the story of a rock star.
Ladies and gentlemen, Ben Franklin!
It's the story of Ben Franklin, patriot, inventor, and, yes, ladies' man. Ben Franklin, as only the History Channel can bring you. Catch the lightning this Sunday at 9, 8 Central.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. Yesterday, labor leaders and activists gathered together at Queens College in New York City for the Labor at the Crossroads Conference.
There is a crisis in America for working people.
Bruce Rayner, general president of Unite Here, spoke as part of a panel discussion on revitalizing the labor movement.
28 million people go to work every day in this country today and live in poverty. Not people unemployed, but people who work. In the last 4 years, George Bush has presided over the loss of 2.9 million manufacturing jobs, more jobs lost in those 4 years than the previous 22 years.
During the noon hour, union members picketed a Verizon wireless store in Midtown Manhattan, highlighting the cell phone carrier's illegal anti-union tactics.
Basically, what Verizon Wireless is doing is attempting to pressure out the union.
Laverne Conley was a Verizon Wireless employee for 2.5 years before she was fired for encouraging her coworkers to fight for collective bargaining rights.
My biggest concern was just a respectable work environment where people came in every day and as long as they were doing a good job, knew they had a job the next day.
The conference continues through today.
Michigan's Democratic governor plans to remove same-sex partner benefits from contracts negotiated with state workers. An aide to Governor Jennifer Granholm says that benefits are being removed because voters passed an amendment on November 2nd that bans gay marriage and similar unions. The contracts will be adopted on December 15th. Granholm aide David Fink says that if the courts resolve the issue of same-sex benefits before the contracts take effect on October 1, 2005, then they could be reinserted. After Granholm spoke at the Democratic National Convention, many characterized her as a rising star in the party.
800 General Motors workers in Linden, New Jersey face an uncertain future as GM ends operations there 2 years earlier than planned. But at least they won't be hurting for wages between now and the originally planned phase-out of plant operations. Because they have income protection built into their contracts, the 800 union workers will get paid 95% of their wages for 48 weeks while on unemployment. After that, they'll collect their full salaries while doing community service work, right up to the September 2007 date when production of the Chevy Blazer and Jimny SUVs was originally set to end. Here's today's Dow Bob report. The consumer price index was up by 0.6% for October, 3.2% higher than October of 2003. Energy costs led the increase in the cost of living for working families, rising 4.2% over a year ago. Food prices are also higher. Many of the necessities working families must buy, including gasoline, food, and heating oil, are all more expensive, and this comes at a time when real worker wages have declined. Inflation for the first 10 months of this year rose at an annual rate of 3.9%, according to the consumer price index.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
It's becoming more precarious for failing to toe the line in what I believe.
And welcome back. Bernie, it may be that I was promulgating misinformation. Maybe Dave is absolutely right. I spent the few minutes during the break on the web trying to track down this House bill, and it was introduced by a Democrat, and I can't make sense of the language of the bill. It's all in legalese, so I can't tell you what it is. So we'll find out for a future week.
But let's agree that it is terribly important.
It is.
Schools in Michigan and all over this country not only study social studies and what it means to live in a democratic society, but we do a lot better than we are doing right now.
Amen. Well said. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Dave in Humboldt County on the line. Hey, Dave, welcome to the program.
Hey, good morning. Bernie, normally I love you and what you try to do for this country, but this morning you've got me ready to try to throw my radio out the window here. There are things you don't want to believe. There were districts all over Iowa, Florida, New Mexico, where they had maybe 1,000 people registered to vote, largely Democratic districts. Those precincts, some of them delivered 3, 4, 5, 6,000 votes to Bush. Wherever they used these voting machines, the exit polls went way out of whack. It showed Kerry winning. Reality was Bush won. There was no way to verify it, no record to go back and recount. We've been trying to get rid of these voting machines for a long time. They're still in place. They fully intend to keep them in place. And talking about anything else is failing to see reality, in my opinion.
Okay. What are your thoughts on that, Bernie?
I wouldn't argue with you. I think that the fact that there are voting machines being used in this country which don't leave a paper trail is an outrage, and it's something that we have got to eliminate. People have a right to know that if a recount takes place, or they have a right to know that their vote has been registered. So I have a great deal of concern with these touchscreen machines that don't give us a paper trail. Yeah. It is a very huge issue.
And in fact, you're one of the co-sponsors with Rush Holt of the bill to
right.
move.
And we're going to accelerate our efforts on that. That is a big, big deal. I just, you know, the argument is, without getting into it now, whether Dave is suggesting that in some places it appears that votes came out differently than people thought they did. There are people who have a different opinion on that and make the case that in some of those same districts, while people were registered Democratic, the Republicans won last election as well.
Yeah, yeah. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Ed in New Jersey on the line. Hey, Ed, welcome to the program. You're live with Congressman Bernie Sanders.
Thank you very much. I was listening to the program, and I'd like to thank you for all the good that you're putting out to the people. I have a question in regard to the voting machines also, and also to the voting, what they're going to be doing in with the Ohio recount. And my question basically is, if fraud is found, and same like in Florida, what Bev Harris is doing, is somebody going to come out and do anything about it? Somebody going to protest the Electoral College vote, you know?
Yeah, the answer is that if fraud is found, I suspect a number of us in Congress will be very vocal and active on that. I mean, that's what democracy is, and if there is fraud, it is simply unacceptable and undermines the whole existence of our country. What I think my view is, having talked, for example, to people who have worked very, very hard in Ohio, which is, you know, the key, perhaps was the key state determining the election, is people did not think, I mean, people who were on the ground working 20 hours a day did not think that there was voter fraud. What they did think, and what is an outrage, is that you had a very political Secretary of State, a Republican, who for some reason or another, whatever happened, is there were a minimal number of voting machines in heavily Democratic areas where there were very, very long lines, and that it is likely that some people simply chose not to wait online for a few hours, and the Democrats lost votes that way, which is an outrage. But I've not heard friends in Ohio who really have been involved in this think that the machines themselves were manipulated.
Yeah. Okay, thanks, Ed, for the call. I appreciate it. And Bernie, in fact, yesterday we had a news report about a fellow who was a former Republican county chairman, I think it was in Franklin County, Ohio, who was responsible by virtue of his job description, somehow working for the Secretary of State, for deciding where machines went. And he reallocated a whole bunch of machines out of inner city areas and primarily Democratic areas into suburban white Republican areas, and thus producing these 8, 10, 12-hour lines in the Democratic areas and 20, 30-minute waits in the Republican areas.
I mean, that is an outrage. That is an outrage, period.
Yeah.
And the broader issue, not only is that an outrage, which must be dealt with, that is illegal, that is unacceptable, because people are not going to wait many, many hours, and that's just stealing votes in another way. But we have got to ask ourselves why in the year 2004, with all of the technology out there, anybody is waiting hours to vote in America.
Yeah.
Why we don't have a much smoother, easier, clearly a system that everybody agrees has integrity in it. Other countries have independent agencies that run elections and not political people who have a very vested interest in the outcome. And we've got to look at that hard.
Yeah, well said. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Mike in Orlando, Florida on the line. Hey, Mike, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, Tom and Bernie. Bernie, when's the hearing for Gonzalez going to be held? Attorney General.
Probably fairly. I'm not in the Senate, but my guess is that they will be done fairly soon.
Do you think that they're going to demand an explanation of the memo that discussed torture techniques and how to circumvent international law?
Do I think some senators will raise that? Mike, yeah, I suspect some of them will.
If they don't, then that's, you know, basically an approval of it. And if they sit on their hands on this, you know, I'm going to lose all faith in every part of the government.
Well, what I think you should do, I mean, Mike, you know, one way that you could, he will be coming before the Judiciary Committee, write to the members who are on that Judiciary Committee, and you know, just do your best to make sure that they raise those issues.
Yeah.
That's
well,
a good idea.
Well done. Okay, Mike, thanks for the call. 1-866-889-8894, telephone number. John in Houston, Texas on the line. Hey, John, welcome to the program.
Hey, how y'all doing today?
Good.
Look, why don't they have a separate polling for Republicans and one for Democrats and let them monitor their own voting? Rather, you know, they use if the Democrats choose to use the first ballots or whatever, let them do it, the Republicans use the machine that
them use it. Interesting question, well, John.
That is an interesting issue. I mean, I think you have to have uniform voting standards. And, you know, for a start, John, as you know, a lot of people are not Democrats. They're not Republicans. I'm an independent. A lot of people are independents. But what we have to have is a voting system in which people have integrity, in which there are paper trails, and that is really not that hard in the year 2004, and that's something Congress has got to absolutely address.
Right. Well said. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Bob in Grand Rapids, Michigan on the line. Hey, Bob, welcome to the program. You're live with Congressman Sanders.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Bernie.
Hi.
Is there any way, Bernie, that you can take, probably not, but I hear these Republicans or right-wing people make all these claims that the teachers aren't teaching the children. Well, you know, you can claim teachers aren't teaching the children, but I'm an ex-truck driver, and just what I've seen from deliveries and stuff like that and listening to kids, it's as though the parents are never home to see to it that the kids are doing their homework.
Right.
It's not that the teachers aren't teaching, it's the parents aren't doing the parenting.
Which goes back to our economic problems, right, Bernie?
Well, it does. And I think, you know, it's always easy to attack education. You know, I'm talking to you right now, Tom, from Woodstock High School in Woodstock, Vermont. And I just, you know, spoke to a couple of classes of kids, and these kids and teachers are doing, in my view, a very, very good job. The issue here, it's easy to beat up on public education because by law, public education must accept all children. So you're going to have kids coming in from dysfunctional families. Kids are coming in with all kinds of problems. Schools don't have the resources to effectively deal with that. And then the teachers and schools get blamed. And your point is well taken. What we're looking at is many families where both mom and dad are working, where parents don't have the time to spend with their kids or are not doing a good job. But just to beat up on teachers and beat up on schools is wrong. They said, well, look at these wonderful private schools. Yeah, no kidding. They cost $30,000 a year. They have class sizes of 8 kids. Mom and dad all are doctors and lawyers. No kidding. The kids are doing very, very well.
Yeah. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. John in Pennsylvania on the line. Hey, John, where in Pennsylvania located?
Lancaster City.
Uh-huh. Great. Welcome to the program.
It's a pleasure to speak to Congressman Sanders and you too, Tom.
Thank you.
Question is on the voting delays that people have been experiencing. I'm wondering if this early voting that at least half the states have isn't something that could solve that problem.
That's a good point, John, and I think it is part of the solution. And I think, while some will argue against it, I think weighing the pros and cons, it is a positive development. And one can only guess how bad the problem could have been in certain regions if we didn't have early voting. But I think when you do have early voting, people have the time and it does speed up the process on Election Day because so many people have voted previously.
Right. Okay. Well, that was my question. That's sort of the way I felt as well, and I just wanted to get your view on that.
And it encourages, I think it will end up resulting in a higher voter turnout. For a lot of reasons, people choose not to trump down to City Hall or to their local precinct to vote. or to their town hall, but they would prefer, you know, to vote in a more leisurely manner, not wait online, et cetera, et cetera. So I think it's a good idea that we should encourage.
Okay. Right, thank you very much.
Thanks, John, for the call. Bernie, Congressman Jesse Jackson Jr. has introduced a piece of legislation for instant runoff voting, IRV, like they have in Australia and like they have now in San Francisco. And I think we have about 220 communities around the United States that have IRV. The Green Party is a big advocate of it. Do you see that bill going anywhere?
Probably not, because it makes a lot of sense. I will strongly support it. I know a lot of, as you indicated, communities, states, state of Vermont is dealing with that issue.
Yeah.
And here's why it makes sense. You know, the U.S. Constitution did not create a two-party state and just two major parties. And as I think most of your listeners know, all over the country, all over the world, you have countries in which you have three parties or even more active and vital parties. And that gives people, I think, more freedom of choice to get involved and to support candidates who are closer to their point of view, whether they're conservative, progressive, whatever they may be. The problem, obviously, with the American system, if, let's just say, you really don't like the Republican candidate, you don't want him or her to win, you're not crazy about the Democratic candidate. There's a third-party green progressive candidate who you really like, but a vote for that person could elect the Republican. Well, you're kind of torn. If you had instant runoff, you could vote your conscience and you say, all right, I want to vote green or progressive, number one, Democrat, number two, Republican, you know, number three. So your vote is not, quote-unquote, wasted.
Right, and it works very, very well. And as Howard Dean pointed out at that meetup, it also discourages negative campaigning, which I thought was a neat little thing. I'd never thought about that. I thought that was remarkable. Dale in Nebraska is on the line. Our telephone number, 1-866-889-8894. Hey, Dale, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me. First off, I wanted to say thank you to both of you for the service you're providing. And I'd like to revisit the issue of education a little bit, if I may.
Sure.
Of course, I have a wife that's a teacher. And being here in the Midwest, one of the frustrations, which is a major one for her, that she has witnessed, especially the last 4 to 5 years, has been the influx of the Mexican culture into the community. And the reason that's a concern is because so many of the children coming into our system are unable to speak English. And because of that, she has really had to hold back some of the other kids simply because of the extra time that it has taken in order to do the additional education to help these children through. And so the No Child Left Behind scenario is just a miserable failure out here, because then the school gets rated as not doing its job when, in essence, they are doing their job the best they can, but because of this added situation as far as trying to educate and teach English to these students, it's just really bottlenecking the system.
Right, and then that negative rating actually cuts their funding.
Absolutely. It's a no-win situation that they're under, and yet they're being told, no matter what the situation is, they are not to let any child slip through. So she's being forced to pass children that otherwise, in her heart and mind, she feels should not be, and needs additional education, but that's the system we are living in here in the Midwest.
Bernie, Dale's question also raises another one, and if you don't mind, in the last minute or two and a half minutes here we have, if you take a shot at both of them, number one, is it possible that the No Child Left Behind Act can either get fully funded or rolled back or replaced with something that's rational? And number two, I recently heard on Lou Dobbs, actually, he said one out of every 10 Mexican citizens lives in the United States right now. Over 3 million people a year coming in from Mexico through our southern border illegally. And this is placing a burden. I mean, this is a very hot potato issue.
Absolutely,
politically.
Absolutely.
What are your thoughts on both of
those?
Well,
I voted against No Child Left Behind. I think it has been a disaster, not just in the Midwest, but as I speak to educators in Vermont and around the country, they also see it as a disaster. And I think when we talk about people attacking public schools, here's Dale's point is well taken. Here they are being forced to undertake the enormously difficult job of teaching a new language and a new culture to a whole lot of kids, which takes a great deal of time, energy, and money. which in most cases schools do not have, and in many cases, given their limited resources, they're doing very well. But then they get attacked despite how well they're doing under those very difficult circumstances. To answer your question, do I, you know, given the fact that the Republicans have more support in Congress right now, no, I'm not optimistic that there'll be major changes.
Yeah.
But we'll do our best to try to bring that about.
Okay, and we have to take a break here. We can talk about immigration some other time. We also have another caller. So 10 minutes before the hour, it's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. It's our regular Friday afternoon session, Brunch with Bernie, Congressman Bernie Sanders, 1-866-889-8894. Our number, you're listening to the True People's Radio. Stick around.
Bonjour, my name is Véronique Raskin. I founded the Organic Wine Company 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious. When turned into wine, you can really taste the difference with every sip. So our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you three of my favorite organically grown French wines at half off the regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. Isn't that magnifique? I think so. If you don't share my enthusiasm, I'll gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me at 1-888-ECO-WINE. ECOWINE. Au revoir.
Do you want to find out what the invasion of Iraq was really about? Read the new illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Once you've read We the People, you'll understand why conservatives are trying to bankrupt government and how perpetual war is used as a political strategy in the United States. You'll learn how our votes are in danger and what we must do about it. You'll discover why the Alien and Sedition Acts of 1798 matter today. Populist watchdog and national radio commentator Jim Hightower had this to say about We the People.
Not only does this book tell you what's really going on, but it even draws you a picture of it. Read, learn, and act.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. A compelling story of how a government by and for the people has been replaced by corporate domination. Fully illustrated by Neil Cohn, We the People issues a call to action in a most entertaining way. Available in bookstores everywhere.
For thousands of years, millions of people have trusted the healing power of herbs. Healing Hollers, an earth-based business in the southern Ozarks, has formulated medical herbal salves proven effective in promoting healing and providing relief for many skin conditions, including a healing salve with antiseptic and antibacterial properties to treat cuts, burns, scalds, and wounds, an antifungal salve safe and effective for athlete's foot, ringworm, nail, and other fungal infections, and a soothing calendula salve to reduce pain and inflammation from dry skin, eczema, and rashes, including diaper rash. These salves contain only herbs and roots, organically grown or ethically wildcrafted natural oils and beeswax from the Ozarks. To learn more about these salves and other natural products from Healing Hollers, go to www.healing-hollers.com. That's www.healing-hollers.com.
An international agreement marks a small step toward protecting a fearsome fish. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. Great white sharks frighten a lot of people, but people scare sharks even more. Commercial fishing kills a lot of sharks all over the world, and in some places this pressure is excessive. But the global trade in shark meat will now be under closer scrutiny. New rules for selling it are now part of the Convention on International Trade in Endangered Species. George Burgess is a shark expert with the University of Florida, and he's active in shark conservation. He says the international agreement provides different levels of protection to endangered species. The action on white sharks is listed in Appendix 2, and it requires monitoring the trade in shark fins and shark meat.
Some might say, well, so what? We're not a whole lot better off than what we are. White sharks are still dying. Fins are still being moved from point A to point B. But the fact of the matter is getting the species listed on Appendix 2 is a first step, and a very significant first step. It puts the animal under a magnifying glass, so any trade in this animal now will have to be monitored very carefully and documented. And so we'll get a much better indication of exactly how much is moving around.
Some parts of the international agreement specifically prohibit trade in some species. The recent action on white sharks does not do that. But Burgess says it's still a great step forward.
Shark populations are on decline in most areas of the world as a result of overfishing and habitat loss. And so getting the largest of the predatory sharks, the white shark, aboard Appendix 2 is a real plus. And so hopefully this will put the plato sharks worldwide on the front page.
The action on white sharks came during a meeting of international delegates in October. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You took all the trees and put them in a tree museum.
And welcome back. 5 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. It's our Brunch with Bernie segment. Congressman Bernie Sanders, America's congressman, in my opinion, the only independent member of the House of Representatives, is with us every Friday and with us today. And Bernie, Diane in Miami Beach is on the line. Hey, Diane, welcome to the program.
Hi. I really want to thank you, first of all, for providing this program. But I wanted to also say I'm a product of the New York City school system, and I've been raising a child here on Miami Beach who goes to the public schools here. And it's equally easy to lay all the blame on the parent. I keep getting these progress reports and such that say things like he doesn't participate in class. Well, that's the teacher's job. And as I said, I've seen my share of poor teachers when I was a student as well. And that's all I wanted to say.
Well, I mean, Diane makes a fair point. I don't think anyone is going to say that public education in America is doing all that it should be doing. In some cases, it's doing very poorly. In some cases, it is doing really, really well. My only point was that it's easy to beat up on public schools for problems which are not their causation. And the goal is to substantially improve our educational system so that it is the best in the world. And we've got a lot of work, clearly, to do that.
Yeah.
We do, and I hope it happens in my lifetime.
All right.
Thank you.
But that also, it has to do with not only adequate funding, but understanding that what happens in the schools is, to some degree, reflective of what happens in societies. When you have dysfunctional families out there, it's not quite so fair to blame the schools for all of those problems.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't argue with Diane. We can do and must do, and I've got to do a lot better than we're doing.
Yeah, not to mention this culture. I used to do a lot of in-service trainings in schools, and I'm the president of the board of directors of a private school, and I've written a bunch of books on education. And there is this, if there's a problem, give them a pill mentality that has taken over America in the last 15 years or 10 years since they kind of legalized the promotion of medications on TV. And that seems to be influencing education as well.
Well, that's certainly a very serious issue. And the other issue, Tom, is, I mean, just turn on TV on any given night, see what's on commercial television. Incredible violence, incredible pandering to almost our worst instincts. And then we say, kids, forget about that. You've watched TV for 40 hours a week and go into school and becoming seriously involved in intellectual activity.
Yeah. Yeah, there has to be more. We need to we could fix the world, Bernie, couldn't we? And we're going to. Last 20 seconds, a message for our listeners.
One of the issues that we're working on is this whole issue of credit card ripoffs, where these credit card companies are charging 25-28% and charging outrageous late fees. Maybe we can talk about that next week.
Great. And people can find out more about that at bernie.house.gov, because I know you're
absolutely. Our website is focusing on that.
Great. Thanks a lot, Bernie. It's
Thank
the Tom,
you, Tom.
We'll see you next week. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Yeah.
If it weren't for In These Times, I'd be a man without a country, says author Kurt Vonnegut. For more than 27 years, the progressive news magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication the scholar and activist Cornel West calls the most creative and challenging news magazine of the American left. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Turn to In These Times for stories on civil liberties, the environment, labor, feminism, and much more. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich put it this way: to people who say they are sick of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. That's 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. Yesterday, labor leaders and activists gathered together at Queens College in New York City for the Labor at the Crossroads Conference.
There is a crisis in America for working people.
Bruce Rayner, general president of Unite Here, spoke as part of a panel discussion on revitalizing the labor movement.
28 million people go to work every day in this country today and live in poverty. Not people unemployed, but people who work. In the last 4 years, George Bush has presided over the loss of 2.9 million manufacturing jobs, more jobs lost in those 4 years than the previous 22 years.
During the noon hour, union members picketed a Verizon wireless store in Midtown Manhattan, highlighting the cell phone carrier's illegal anti-union tactics.
Basically, what Verizon Wireless is doing is attempting to pressure out the union.
Laverne Conley was a Verizon Wireless employee for 2.5 years before she was fired for encouraging her coworkers to fight for collective bargaining rights.
My biggest concern was just a respectable work environment where people came in every day and as long as they were doing a good job, knew they had a job the next day.
The conference continues through today.
Michigan's Democratic governor plans to remove same-sex partner benefits from contracts negotiated with state workers. An aide to Governor Jennifer Granholm says that benefits are being removed because voters passed an amendment on November 2nd that bans gay marriage and similar unions. The contracts will be adopted on December 15th. Granholm aide David Fink says that if the courts resolve the issue of same-sex benefits before the contracts take effect on October 1, 2005, then they could be reinserted. After Granholm spoke at the Democratic National Convention, many characterized her as a rising star in the party.
800 General Motors workers in Linden, New Jersey face an uncertain future as GM ends operations there 2 years earlier than planned. But at least they won't be hurting for wages between now and the originally planned phase-out of plant operations. Because they have income protection built into their contracts, the 800 union workers will get paid 95% of their wages for 48 weeks while on unemployment. After that, they'll collect their full salaries while doing community service work, right up to the September 2007 date when production of the Chevy Blazer and Jimny SUVs was originally set to end. Here's today's Dow Bob report. The consumer price index was up by 0.6% for October, 3.2% higher than October of 2003. Energy costs led the increase in the cost of living for working families, rising 4.2% over a year ago. Food prices are also higher. Many of the necessities working families must buy, including gasoline, food, and heating oil, are all more expensive, and this comes at a time when real worker wages have declined. Inflation for the first 10 months of this year rose at an annual rate of 3.9%, according to the consumer price index.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Are you tired of progressives spending all their energy on defensive struggles where a victory simply maintains the status quo? We are too, and we're doing something about it. At ReclaimDemocracy.org, we're taking the initiative to revoke corporate power and restore citizen authority over corporations to enable genuine progress on the many issues that we all care about. Get involved. Visit us online at ReclaimDemocracy.org or call 406-582-1224.
Spam is uniquely American. This mysterious meat-like concoction in a pull-tab can is a made-in-the-USA icon of American marketing, produced by Hormel Foods in Minnesota. I happen to love Spam, and no, I don't want to know what's in it. I subsisted on fried Spam sandwiches to get me through college, and I've even been a tasting judge of the sometimes startling Spam concoctions prepared for the renowned Spamorama contest held in my town of Austin, Texas for the past 26 years. But I was stunned, and not a little hurt, to learn that the corporate purveyors of Spam are now trying to hide the Americanism of this potted meat delicacy. It seems that Hormel is concerned that its Spam sales could be hurt in England because of the Brits' rather intense opposition to George W.'s war in Iraq. Indeed, a poll finds that 20% of consumers in Britain, Japan, and elsewhere say they'll shun such identifiably American products as Spam, Marlboro, and Starbucks to protest Bush's my way or the highway approach to the rest of the world. To counter this possibility, Hormel has launched a $3.7 million marketing blitz in England in an effort to position Spam as quintessentially British. The ads, featuring typical Brits, portray Spam as a longtime part of the British culture, as though it's a homegrown product with no connection to that place across the pond. Hormel has even anglicized the Spamorama Festival. The Spam Chippy of the Year Award is presented to the British fish and chip shop that makes the best dish from this pink meat stuff. They also named the Spam Chef of the Year in England, a culinary honor that was recently won by a chap who makes Spam wontons. This is Jim Hightower saying, come on, Hormel, stop hiding your beautiful pink piece of Americana under a British bushel. You should strut your stuff as one of the good things from America. Instead of Bush's gunboat diplomacy, show the world Spam diplomacy.
It's night. You have heartburn. You want fast relief. Zantac works fast. When first used, Prilosec OTC works not so fast. Zantac works right when you need it.
Hello, relief.
Prilosec's label says it may take 1 to 4 days to fully work. So, what would you choose?
Estimated time of relief, 1 to 4 days.
Prilosec, nah. Zantac's for people who hate to wait, especially at night. Use as directed.
The Chicago Underground Daily calls it an amazing cinematic wonder, spellbinding.
My daughter, I'm not sure if I can make it.
Father, you must remain strong, for I bring good news.
Oh, you bring good news?
Yes, I just save a bunch of money on car insurance by switching to Geico.
See how much you could save. Visit Geico.com. Geico, 15 minutes online could save you 15% on car insurance.
Rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back to our program. Tom Hartman here with you. The Los Angeles Times is talking about this question with CNN. There is a question behind the question, I think, that needs to be asked. And I'm frankly surprised that nobody in the mainstream media is asking it. Other than possibly the LA Times, and I'm not sure that they even went so far. I mean, they basically just, you know, raised the issue about... There used to be Doug Feith. Doug Feith had put together this thing. There used to be this Pentagon Office of Disinformation. And the brainchild of Poindexter, as I recall, John Poindexter, the old Nixon guy and the old Reagan Iran-Contra guy. And they had come up with this idea of developing a psychological operations unit within the Pentagon that's main function was to spread disinformation in ways that was strategic. And I think the where they really blew it was when this became public in suggesting that one of the targets of this disinformation should be the American people. In other words, it was the Office of Propaganda. There are times, of course, when you want the enemy to think you're going to do one thing and you do another. The Normandy invasion is a great example. The British had gone to, and with Eisenhower and all this, you know, they had gone to such extent as to build an entire, what looked like an air base out of cardboard and plywood airplanes on the ground so that the Germans would think something was happening in one place when, in fact, it was happening in another. Maybe it was tanks. It's been a lot of years since I read that book. But in any case, disinformation is a reasonable and appropriate thing under certain circumstances. But here's the question. On October 14th, 3 weeks before, 2 weeks before a presidential election, the Marines made this statement that they were attacking Fallujah. And you've got, for example, Lou Dobbs, CNN anchor. Tonight, a major military operation in Iraq. The U.S. military and Iraqi forces advancing against insurgents in Fallujah. A ground and air attack is underway at this hour. And then he goes on to say, tonight, U.S. Marines have launched a major assault on the insurgent stronghold of Fallujah, west of Baghdad. American air warplanes and artillery blasting suspected insurgent positions within the city. The attack comes one day after the Iraqi prime minister ordered Fallujah's leaders to hand over foreign fighters or face, as he put it, annihilation. And then he goes to Jamie McIntyre, who repeats the line. And it was all a lie, of course. Now, the Army says that they put this lie out to CNN to get it reported on American news so that the fighters in Fallujah would think that the offensive had started so that they could see how they would respond. Are these people going to run to the south? Are they going to run to the north? Are they going to fortify? What are they going to do? But that assumes that the people in Fallujah are watching Lou Dobbs. And I'm sorry, he's not on the air in Iraq. Which then raises the question, why? Why was this released? And there's a growing number of people who are asking, was this really part of an election psychological operations program by Karl Rove and friends to make it look like the war was going well, but there were no casualties? They got to announce that they were attacking Fallujah. No casualties, because there was no attack going on. George Bush got to look like he was being a tough guy. No risk. Bush gets kudos, helping him in the polls, and there was a bump in the polls, by the way, when this announcement came out. It's only about a point and a half, but it was a bump. And it turns out that Bush had lied about this. Was it for a military purpose, or was it, in fact, for a political purpose? I think it's a legitimate question. I think somebody should be looking into it. And unfortunately, because the House and the Senate are both controlled by Republicans, and the only other person who can investigate the executive branch is the Attorney General, and George W. Bush has just appointed his own lawyer, who he brought with him from Texas, a very loyal, what the British are calling Tony Blair a poodle or a lapdog. I'm not sure those probably have more to do with Blair's haircut than anything else. I'm not sure what the appropriate phrase would be. Let's say a loyal friend. Let's just leave it at that. And it's unlikely that he's going to be investigating or prosecuting George W. or the administration or any of this kind of thing. So odds are we just won't find out. But I still think it's worth raising. Welcome back to the program. Tom Hartman here with you. Our number 1-866-889-8894 if you'd like to call in. Our website, tomhartman.com. Click on live chat. It'll get you into the chat room. Click on message board, and it'll get you to the place where you'll find 30,000 or more messages, people having conversations not in real time, but you post a message and then a little later on somebody else will post it. You can also, by the way, on the message boards, there's a neat little feature where you can click this little button down at the bottom that says email notification. So if you start a message and anybody replies to it, you get an email saying, you know, somebody's replied to your message. It's not the default. The default is for you not to know about it. But for those of you who are using the message board, it's a neat little thing that I use on those threads that I want to keep track of, find it very useful. December 11th, that's a week from tomorrow. In New York City, they're going to have the second New York City Black Box Tea Party. This is going to be in Times Square at the southeast corner of Broadway and 42nd Street. And it says, bring a black box, your indignation, and a sign. This is a protest about black box voting, a protest of the fact that two corporations, the president of one, ES&S, and the vice president of the other, Diebold, are brothers, heavily Republican connected. These two corporations counting the majority of the votes in the United States. I've seen various estimates ranging as high as 80%, depending, I suppose, on how you define count. And so, you know, raising the question, should the beating heart of democracy be in the hands of a private corporation in a way that does not allow for transparency? As I've said many times in this program, I'm all in favor of free enterprise, and there's a lot of things. There are a lot of things that corporations can do better than government. Many. And when it comes to manufacturing, producing consumer goods, that kind of thing, it would be insane to suggest that we should go to a demand or to a production-driven economy, a state-owned economy, you know, any kind of, you know, the classic dictionary definition of socialism where the state owns the means of production and distribution. Just doesn't work. I spent time in the Soviet Union before it fell. I spent time in East Germany when the wall was still up. The last time I was in Russia was just a couple of years ago, after the change. They had a pretty rough time with this very, very rapid, what they call liberalization of economic policies. But the bottom line is that the Soviet system was rotting from within, from basically from the 50s on. I mean, it just doesn't work. So I'm not suggesting that the government should get in the business of making voting machines. I have no problem with local municipalities buying voting machines from private corporations. The problem I have is when the software on the machines, the source code for the machines, is owned by the private corporations, and they refuse to share it with we the people. This is a fairly simple thing. Why don't we simply say the software has to be open source? Anybody can look at it, and it is, you know, managed by government agencies, or for that matter, by the private corporations, if it's totally transparent. But frankly, I'd feel more comfortable if the actual handling of our vote, the actual taking of the vote from the time you push the button until the time it gets printed out on a piece of paper or something, the actual handling of the vote was done by we the people rather than a private corporation that has an outspoken allegiance to one political party, be it Democratic or Republican. And I'm just surprised that there aren't more Republicans who are up in arms about this, too. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. John in Grand Rapids, Michigan on the line. Hey, John, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Well, I see you're at it again, conspiracy and all that. Diebold, you got that name in there, and haven't heard Halliburton or Enron yet, but... And now Bush supposedly cooked up this fake assault on Fallujah in order to get some votes. And
it worked for him.
I really hope you guys keep on with this, because when you're talking about this, you're going to attract a certain type of listener and push away a serious listener.
Yeah, well, John,
when you start talking seriously about corporations, well, then I start to get a little nervous, you know. But as long as you keep on this stuff, it's good. It's all good.
John, you're suggesting that you think that it's just a fine idea that a group of maybe a dozen people on the board of directors of a corporation have absolute control over your vote from the time you push the button until the vote is counted, that it is handled in a way that is not transparent, is completely invisible, and that they claim Fourth Amendment rights of privacy and trade secrecy laws protect them from having to tell you that every 10th vote didn't actually get thrown away. Now, I'm not suggesting that that's happening, but the potential for it is very real. And wouldn't you be a little concerned about that if those corporations were owned by, say, George Soros?
Well, that's kind of a loaded question. George Soros is...
No, it's a serious question.
Well, geez, he's way out there. I mean, come on.
Well, okay, the Amundsen family, who helped start ES&S, which is one of the largest voting machine companies in the United States, belongs to a movement that believes that the Bible should replace the United States Constitution. This is not conspiracy nut theory. This is public record. And yeah. and so, you know, to say George Soros, who I don't think is that far out, in other words, it's just fine with you that you have no idea how your vote is being handled once you cast it.
Well, you know, the whole voting thing, before any of this stuff came up, I was extremely worried about the vote, because the people who have the biggest record of voting fraud are the Democrats. I mean, it's pretty well known that Joe Kennedy bought JFK.
I don't disagree with you. Mayor Daley delivered that, just as Santos Trafficante delivered a lot of Florida to Nixon. I mean, there was massive vote fraud. Lyndon Johnson was the master of ballot stuffing. That's why I'm saying, shouldn't the Republicans be worried about this? What happens when the Democrats are in charge? John, that's my point. Thanks for the call, John. 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Bonjour, my name is Michel, and I founded the Organic Wine Company with my sister 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines yet, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious that when turned into wine, you can really taste the difference. Our wines are delicious and eco-friendly, so I want to make it very easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you three of my favorite organic French wines at half their regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. C'est magnifique! And if you don't agree, I will gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE, which is ECOWINE. Au revoir.
I spent years learning to cope with my mental health problems and just as long conquering substance addiction. But I did both, and I'm incredibly proud. But with the world and everything going on today, I get so overwhelmed. It's so tempting to turn to drugs and alcohol to help me escape. I don't want all of my accomplishments to just go away.
If you or someone you know is abusing drugs and alcohol to cope, get information and treatment referral at 1-800-662-HELP.
Time furnished by the Office of National Drug Control Policy.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The Bush administration can't seem to get it right when it comes to creating jobs. In the U.S., there's a net loss of jobs. In Iraq, the Bush administration blames a clerical error for overstating the number of Iraqi jobs in projects funded by the U.S. Agency for International Development. The agency first said more than 88,000 were working in its projects as of September 15th, but that has changed to just under 46,000 blamed on a clerical error.
Real novelists don't go to graduate school, they go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small-town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor. Palasek's books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
The Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
And who's going to be the one to say it was no good what we done? I dare a man to say I'm too young, for I'm going to try for the sun.
And welcome back. 24 and a half minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Lots in the news today. Some interesting events coming up. What will you be doing on January 20th for George W. Bush's inaugural? There's some folks who have some plans about that. I'll tell you about that in a minute. But first, we have Victoria Jones with the Talk Radio News Service. Hey, Victoria, what are you going to be doing for the inaugural?
I will be freezing my butt off along with the others.
You know, there's a whole bunch of people who are going to they're going to leave behind their buttons and signs and bumper stickers and things and go and look absolutely as normal as they can and mingle in with the crowds, and then at a particular moment they are going to turn their back. At a given signal, we will turn our backs. They're going to turn their back on George W.
Are they going to take their trousers down and moon him?
No, I don't think so. I hope not.
It's a bit cold for that sort of behavior,
yeah,
really.
I think so. But, a respectful response. I applaud that.
Anyhow. I think it's very brave because, you know, the way that the authorities react these days to any kind of dissent, I think you could be deported for that kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, well, especially somebody with an accent like yours.
Well, that's why I'm not going to do it. I'm not that brave.
There you go. So what's happening in Washington, D.C. today?
Well, today, of course, we did hear officially that Bernard Kerik will be nominated to be the Homeland Security Secretary. We're also going to have a resignation of Tommy Thompson as Health and Human Services Secretary. And if you're in the moving business, if you have a moving company, you're doing really well this weekend as everybody clears out their desk and moves. It's really musical chairs in Washington, D.C. this weekend.
Yeah, although this is pretty much what you always see every 4 years.
Indeed, it is.
Yeah.
It is. You know, we're just paying attention this time because it is just it's just intriguing to see who the president's putting into position. In the case of Kerik, of course, this is a man who was commissioner of police in New York City on September the 11th, but he hadn't really done the job for very long. However, he's a big supporter of President Bush and campaigned for him and, frankly, campaigned against John Kerry. And I think that is certainly going to have served him in some good stead in terms of getting this appointment.
Yeah, loyalty goes a long way.
It certainly does.
With the Bush administration.
And that cuts both ways. Now, I find rather interesting, and I don't know the background to this. I don't know what happened, that John Danforth resigned yesterday as UN ambassador. Now, some of the scuttlebutt is that it genuinely was health reasons, that he isn't well. But then the other story to it is, well, that he was ticked off that he didn't get the Secretary of State position, and so he's left, even though he's a very long-term friend of the president. I don't know which it is or if it's something different entirely, but it's interesting that story's not getting much coverage because it's being overshadowed, but I think it's very intriguing.
Yeah, and John Danforth is one of the more moderate guys in this administration, so I would have been frankly surprised if he'd been put in as Secretary of State, although he probably would have been a reasonably decent one.
And probably quite effective with our overseas friends who are concerned, about Condoleezza Rice.
Yeah, but I don't think the Bush wants another Colin Powell. Have you been reading Doonesbury the last couple of days?
Yes.
The Office of Toady Affairs. Oh, my. Okay, so...
Oh, goodness.
So those
are the main things. We have the lighting of the Christmas tree yesterday, and the First Lady unveiled the Christmas decorations. The theme is a white Christmas, and the decorations are just beautiful.
Yeah.
Just very, very beautiful. Of course, nobody gets to see them because you're not allowed to tour the White House anymore, but for those few privileged ones who did see them, they were very beautiful.
Yeah, I saw little clips of it on TV, and Louise made the comment, you know, Laura Bush does a really good job of being First Lady. She's a heavy smoker. You never see her smoking.
Nope.
She knows how to present herself well. She does. We have to tip our hat to her, I think.
Yep, she does a good job.
Yeah. Okay, well, Victoria, thank you very much for that report from the Talk Radio News Service from Washington, D.C. I do appreciate it. Good to hear from you. And
thank you very much.
Talk to you again on Monday, right?
Okay,
have a good one. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Your light. Your light. At the end of the tunnel of talk radio. No, it's not a train coming. It's your positive light. Sometimes I feel like Diogenes, you know? And Gene in Hillsboro, Oregon, and Jeff in Denver will pick up your calls just on the other side of this break. Stick around. We'll be right back. Do you have a child with ADHD who is misunderstood, unhappy, and dissatisfied with school? Are you ready for an educational change and for your child to like school again? Consider The Hunter School, a residential K-8 school specializing in the education of children with ADHD, hunters in a farmer's world. Hunter School appreciates and honors the uniqueness of each student while building upon his inherent strengths and abilities. For more information, find us on the web at hunterschool.org.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. Yesterday, labor leaders and activists gathered together at Queens College in New York City for the Labor at the Crossroads Conference.
There is a crisis in America for working people.
Bruce Rayner, general president of Unite Here, spoke as part of a panel discussion on revitalizing the labor movement.
28 million people go to work every day in this country today and live in poverty. Not people unemployed, but people who work. In the last 4 years, George Bush has presided over the loss of 2.9 million manufacturing jobs, more jobs lost in those 4 years than the previous 22 years.
During the noon hour, union members picketed a Verizon wireless store in Midtown Manhattan, highlighting the cell phone carrier's illegal anti-union tactics.
Basically, what Verizon Wireless is doing is attempting to pressure out the union.
Laverne Conley was a Verizon Wireless employee for 2.5 years before she was fired for encouraging her coworkers to fight for collective bargaining rights.
My biggest concern was just a respectable work environment where people came in every day and as long as they were doing a good job, knew they had a job the next day.
The conference continues through today.
Michigan's Democratic governor plans to remove same-sex partner benefits from contracts negotiated with state workers. An aide to Governor Jennifer Granholm says that benefits are being removed because voters passed an amendment on November 2nd that bans gay marriage and similar unions. The contracts will be adopted on December 15th. Granholm aide David Fink says that if the courts resolve the issue of same-sex benefits before the contracts take effect on October 1, 2005, then they could be reinserted. After Granholm spoke at the Democratic National Convention, many characterized her as a rising star in the party.
800 General Motors workers in Linden, New Jersey face an uncertain future as GM ends operations there 2 years earlier than planned. But at least they won't be hurting for wages between now and the originally planned phase-out of plant operations. Because they have income protection built into their contracts, the 800 union workers will get paid 95% of their wages for 48 weeks while on unemployment. After that, they'll collect their full salaries while doing community service work, right up to the September 2007 date when production of the Chevy Blazer and Jimny SUVs was originally set to end.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The Consumer Price Index was up by 0.6% for October, 3.2% higher than October of 2003. Energy costs led the increase in the cost of living for working families, rising 4.2% over a year ago. Food prices are also higher. Many of the necessities working families must buy, including gasoline, food, and heating oil, are all more expensive, and this comes at a time when real worker wages have declined. Inflation for the first 10 months of this year rose at an annual rate of 3.9%, according to the Consumer Price Index.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Photographer's smile, take a break for a while, take a risk, do your very best, take 500, 500.
And welcome back. Let me just be crystal clear about this before we go to the phones. With regard to voting machines and voting and all that sort of thing, the core concept of American constitutionally limited Republican democracy, of our form of government, which was a radical departure from every form of government that had preceded it, with the exception of the Athenian experiment, is that the common property, the streets, the parks, the air, the wild places would be owned by we the people, rather than by the rulers. I mean, in feudal times, the feudal lords owned even the deer. I mean, if you went out and you shot a deer in the forest without paying the feudal lord or paying the king for it, you could be put to death 400 years ago, 500 years ago. So this radical experiment was, we are going to own all that stuff. Now, if we all own it, we have to have a means by which we administer the commons. This is, by the way, where the word commonwealth, like the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, it's the common wealth, our collective wealth. We have to have a means to administer it, and so we created government to do that. And obviously we can't all show up. This is how we're different from Athenian Greece. In Athens, it took 6,001 people to show up to vote for something. And, you know, it just wasn't practical here. So we came up with this idea of representative democracy. So the way that you and I administer our commons is by electing officials to operate, to work on our behalf, representing our interests. And the way that we elect them is through a voting process. And so you could say that of all the commons, the air, the water, you know, maintaining the cleanliness and safety of our water supply, of our food supply, and our pharmaceuticals, our airways, our roads, our rail lines, of all the commons, one of the most important is the government itself, because that's the means by which we administer the commons. And we also own the government collectively in common. And the tool, which is also part of the commons, via which we determine who is representing us, is the vote, the voting process. That is the beating heart of democracy. It's the ultimate common. And that's why I think that the privatizing of our vote, which has been radically promoted by the Help America Vote Act of 2002, promoted by the Republicans in Congress, giving $3.8 billion to the states to buy voting machines from mostly three very large corporations, all of which have very, very strong affiliations with one particular political party. And frankly, it wouldn't matter to me which party it was, but they are partisan, openly partisan, that this is, in my opinion, it's just wrong. It's just wrong. We should have, like Canada has, like England has, like every other advanced democracy in the world, we should have our votes be handled by civil servants who do it year in and year out. This administration, that administration, doesn't matter. They've been doing this thing for 20 years, and they do it with the people from the political parties who have the partisan concerns looking over their shoulders in a way that is absolutely transparent. The idea that Bev Harris has to go down to Florida and sue Teresa LaPorte and serve her with papers to get LaPorte to give her copies of ballots is outrageous. The fact that there are counties in Ohio, there are counties in Florida, regardless of how the election turned out, who are saying to we the people, I'm sorry, you can't see the vote. It was done on an electronic machine and there is no record of it. There simply is no record of it, other than what this computer is holding. And we can't prove to you that it wasn't hacked or that it wasn't strange or that and in fact, you know, as I've mentioned, Bev Harris has clear records of machines being attempted to be hacked into on election day. These are, you know, things that the voting folks are not disputing. Yes, there were attempts to break into our machines. And yet there's no way to know. They're unauditable. And this is a felony against democracy itself, in my opinion. 1-866-889-8894, telephone number. Gene in Hillsborough, Oregon, on the line. Hey, Gene, thanks for waiting on the line.
Not a problem, Tom.
What's up?
Just a quick comment on John. I would venture to say that Rush Limbaugh started out with people calling him nuts too.
Oh, he did. Sure.
And some people still call him nuts, which is so just, it irks me because I know that you have the things you promote have their, you know, have basis in fact and all that stuff, and I, but anyway.
Well, I got to tell you, Gene, I actually appreciate it when people who disagree with me call. Number one, sometimes I'm wrong, and they help keep me honest. And number two, it provides me with an opportunity to have a discussion with somebody in a way that models for everybody else who's listening, here's how you can talk to the members of your family or the people that you work with whom you disagree in a way that isn't just name-calling or shouting, because I'm really not going to do either one of those two things.
Mm. Well, I just wanted to give you a call and not let him make you feel bad. So.
Okay. Well, I appreciate the moral support, Gene. I really do. It's very kind of you. And thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. Okay. Keep listening and spread the good word. 1-866-889-8894. Jeff in Denver, Colorado on the line. Hey, Jeff, welcome to the program.
Hi. First, just commenting, I guess his name is John. Yes, we do want discussions. I love to discuss things that people have different points of views. But the thing is, I'd actually like to have a discussion rather than just someone laughing when you ask them a question. So, John, please answer the questions. Provide some information, not just allegations.
Yeah, it's a cheap shot on either side. I mean, I've heard people call into right-wing shows and try to ridicule or make fun of the host. And ultimately, it just doesn't work. It doesn't make the caller sound particularly good.
John, yeah, he's provided new information. And actually, when we talk about information, I'm on the ground right now. We're going to his county offices, looking at the records, sitting in warehouses all day, looking at polling machine tapes. And there's one conclusion, absolutely undeniable in conclusion, is there, we cannot prove the way the votes went.
They're in Colorado.
Anywhere that you use an electronic machine that does not have an individual paper record of the ballot, no one can prove who won.
Right.
Now, we can see what the machine said, but that's not proof of how the votes were actually cast. And, I mean, you can see records all around the country. I mean, in Nebraska, in Indiana, and so forth, how electronic voting machines had major errors.
Yeah.
In Sarpy County, Nebraska. An ES&S machine, apparently it was an ES&S, counted about, well, they thought it was initially about 10,000 extra votes, but it ended up being 3,000 extra votes, I believe, in the county. And so the ghost votes happening all over with machines. And so, you know, John, what is wrong with the public? You know, what is wrong with us knowing the truth? What is wrong with the truth being transparent and not being owned by partisan interests?
Yeah.
You know, people controlling the what the truth is.
Well, even if they weren't, even if they weren't partisan. I mean, this is the old thing about, you know, the wife of Caesar or whatever. You know, it has to have you can't even have the appearance of impropriety, or you're going to get people who are worried. And we need to have in the United States a voting system, particularly if we're going to hold ourselves up to the rest of the world as the model for democracy, a voting system that nobody can say has any possibility of being tainted by a fraud, regardless of who owns it, even if it's not partisan people who own it.
Yes. If you should see the pains that we have to go through just audit votes. I mean, first of all, I must say there are some wonderful county employees out there that are really concerned about doing this well.
Yeah.
On the other hand, we've all, you know, they're probably the majority.
Yeah.
On the other hand, we've had to get lawyers involved just to get in a timely fashion to examine the polling tapes and the poll books.
Yeah, it's interesting, and it's worth putting on the record, by the way, that the Ralph Nader recount in New Hampshire has finished, and that they didn't find any evidence of irregularities, and that the machines, now these were just scanners, which we've been using now for a decade or longer, made by Diebold. But the scanners apparently, by and large, I mean, they found a few exceptions, but by and large, accurately and cleanly counted the paper ballots that were fed through them. And, you know, which was a concern on some people. And now you've got the problem at the other counties, because they were looking, there was those counties that used scanners and those that used touchscreen machines. And there was a big difference between the two in how the vote, you know, went. And so Nader, based on the statistical analysis, chose to audit the scanners. I mean, it's expensive to do the whole state, so they just looked at some of them. They audited the scanners and found that there was no problem. So now they've got the problem of the machines that have no paper trail and can't be audited are the ones that are left. And there's still this anomaly between that, you know, the voting patterns in the state shifted, sometimes within the same county, different precincts, depending on the kind of machine that was used. And what does that mean? Well, who knows? I mean, it may be fraud. It may be nothing. But why should we have to ask this question?
Yes, why don't we have a simple interest in the truth, not having the results come out to our way? Because, I mean, look, we had the Cook County things with Mayor Daley years ago. The Democrats and other states, yes, there's voting fraud. Why do we want to support voting fraud in any way, shape, or form from any party?
Right.
I'll abide by the results even if I disagree with them, as long as I know the truth. And right now, I know we don't know the truth.
We can't
be assured of it.
The thing that really concerns me or it troubles me in as much as it looks bad. I'm not wearing a tinfoil hat here to quote Keith Olbermann. But the thing that concerns me is that when I go to my local bank, my ATM machine to take money out, I punch in buttons into a Diebold machine, and it gives me the money and it gives me a paper receipt. If I buy a ticket for a sporting event from a machine, in some cities they have them. Diebold is the main manufacturer of those things. You get a paper receipt. Can you imagine making a deposit into one of these machines and not getting a paper receipt? I mean, Diebold makes a number of different kinds of, you know, data entry and data pullout machines, and all of them always produce a paper receipt. And then they came out with these voting machines, and they said, we can't produce a paper receipt.
Well, they have two arguments in that. Well, first of all, can you imagine getting a bank statement each month that just said, oh, we took $30,000 out of your account? So they have no individual record of any transaction.
Well, it'd be kind of cool to have $30,000 for them to take out.
But anyway, they have arguments both of the printing thing, which of course, you know, there are printers all over that don't jam.
Right.
The other one they have is arguing about the scanning. Well, look, we scan very wrinkled dollar bills that you hold in your pocket that's been in hundreds of people's pockets. They get scanned fine every day.
Yeah.
So the technology is completely there. It's actually... Well, since you bring up the thing of financial things, some of us are working now on a voting system that's basically a double-entry voting system. I mean, it has two separate paths where the vote is counted and they're compared, just the way accounting works. You have a double-entry bookkeeping system. So
you create an audit trail at the same time you're creating the primary path.
But we're creating two separate paths that actually the electronic machine that you vote on is counted, that counts the system, and is a totally separate path, and then it prints out a paper ballot. You feed into a second machine, and that counts.
Right.
So the system is self-auditing, because auditing right now is a nightmare.
Yeah.
We've had to just keep getting more and more volunteers. We went to one county where the tapes that came out of the machines are just dumped into one big, you know, or several boxes. no rhyme, no reason. And to just simply get the precincts to get the tapes from the, there are like 8 tapes per precinct,
mm-hmm.
to get them together so we can check the precinct counts is a nightmare. It's taking us forever.
Yeah. Now, you're actually doing this auditing there in Colorado. Are you finding that the machines are fairly straight up? I mean, are you finding any evidence of what you might consider vote fraud, or does it look like things are copacetic?
We're still not sure. Each time we find something, many times we'll find, well, it does turn out that the machines do agree. But we have suspicions on some things, and we'll tell you what really helps, and this is a message we'd like to broadcast to everybody. It's the people who are actually manning the polls, the election judges and such. Those are the people that need to speak up and take a look to see if the results match the tapes. Because we have one poll judge said, hey, there were 112 more votes that came out of the machines, or something like that,
mm-hmm.
than the actual people who voted in our precinct. And we're still hunting down the tapes for those machines.
Hmm.
And so we have allegations all over the place, but trying to prove them, it takes a hell of a lot of work.
Yeah.
And, many of us are neglecting our regular sources of income to do this.
Yeah.
And, of course, even that shouldn't be done. I mean, what should be happening is when the vote totals, the precinct and the county totals and so forth, should be posted on the web in a raw data form that can be downloaded by anybody who can be put in a spreadsheet or database to be analyzed.
That would be fairly straightforward.
It's totally straightforward, and it's very easy to do. Right now, it takes everybody much more work. It takes the county officials more work to deal with us.
Yeah.
And anyone who programs a computer, such as myself, knows this is just, I mean, the data's already there.
Yeah, and frankly, if we're going to go to instant runoff voting, which I really believe we must if we're going to expand democracy in the United States and open up the democratic process so that people people on the right who are beyond on the right, the Republican Party, and people on the left who are beyond the Democratic Party can actually have their voices heard.
Yes.
So that the Michael Badnarik's, the Libertarian Party, the Constitutional Law Party, and the Green Party and whatnot, that they can all really and truly participate. If we're going to do that, we're going to have computers. I mean, it's just no way around it. So we might as well make them clean and transparent. Jeff, thanks for the call. Great to
Take
hear
care.
From you. And keep up the good work there in Denver. I think that's just great that you're volunteering to do that and keep things honest. Strip searches at Reagan National Airport. I'll tell you about it in just a second. It's the Tom Hartman Program, 10 minutes before the hour.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
This is Veronique Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug, the phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the business my target audience, people who are conscious and responsible and try to do the right thing and try to think for themselves. I would encourage anyone to advertise on the Thomas Hartman Show, absolutely, without question, whether that be on the national level or the local level. And you will absolutely get results. The way you can learn more about our imported organically grown wines from France is by calling us. The phone number is 1-888-ECO-WINE, or you can visit our site at www.ecowine.com.
For thousands of years, millions of people have trusted the healing power of herbs. Healing Hollers, an earth-based business in the Southern Ozarks, has formulated medical herbal salves proven effective in promoting healing and providing relief for many skin conditions, including a healing salve with antiseptic and antibacterial properties to treat cuts, burns, scalds, and wounds. An antifungal salve safe and effective for athlete's foot, ringworm, nail, and other fungal infections. And a soothing calendula salve to reduce pain and inflammation from dry skin, eczema, and rashes, including diaper rash. These salves contain only herbs and roots organically grown or ethically wildcrafted natural oils and beeswax from the Ozarks. To learn more about these salves and other natural products from Healing Hollers, go to www.healing-hollers.com. That's www.healing-hollers.com.
An international group of scientists say amphibians around the world are in serious trouble. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. People have been talking for years about problems that are hitting frogs and other types of amphibians. A group of 500 scientists recently issued a report on the status of these animals after reviewing research from all corners of the globe. They say the outlook is grim. There are more than 5,700 different species of amphibians, and more than 1,800 of them are headed toward extinction. Simon Stewart directed the project, and he says the results were worse than he ever imagined.
When we started this process to do the global amphibian assessment 3.5 years ago, we never dreamt that the situation would be this bad. Not only is it bad with nearly a third of the species at risk of extinction in the world, but also there are a number of species that are deteriorating very rapidly. 435 species that are in very rapid decline around the world. So, yeah, it's unfortunately a very grim picture.
Stewart is a biologist who works for the International Union for Conservation of Nature. He says amphibians are particularly sensitive creatures. They have permeable skin, so they quickly suffer from exposure to chemicals in their surroundings. And Stewart says many species are adapted to small geographic areas. They can't just pick up and move if their habitat is destroyed or if the climate starts to change. The scientific report is called the Global Amphibian Assessment. A news release about it was issued in October, and Stewart says it drew a lot of attention. He says that's one small piece of good news.
The worldwide coverage of this story has just blown our minds, and the desire that people have to learn more about it suggests that more people care than we might think.
Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
I'd gladly walk across the desert with no shoes upon my feet to share with you the last bread I had to eat.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. New allegations tonight about illegal strip searches taking place inside Reagan National Airport. This from a report from WJLA, a TV station in that area. They interviewed some TSA employees who were upset about what was being done by other TSA employees, which I think is an honorable thing. One TSA employee said, the look on their face would almost give you the sense that they felt like they were being, in a sense, raped. In a sense, being victimized, and to a certain extent, they were. Another TSA employee says, they actually had the passenger remove the clothing that covered the sensitive area, in other words, take off their underwear, and perform a duck walk to see if something would fall out. This is about as close as they're getting to body cavity searches on women, I guess. And where was this done? It was done under a stairwell that was accessible to the public and was somewhat obscured, but could be seen. TSA employee, I couldn't believe it. And I said, and so then somebody complained. So they moved it into a supervisor's office. They moved these strip searches into a supervisor's office. And it turns out that there was a hidden video camera in there. TSA employee. I couldn't believe it. I said, is there a camera up there? And they said, yeah. Andrea McCarron, the reporter, do you think the women being strip searched had any idea they were being videotaped? TSA employee, absolutely not. Andrea McCarron, the reporter, you're saying a female passenger would be stopped for additional screening not because she set off an alarm but because of her breast size? TSA employee, absolutely yes. TSA employees, it's very upsetting to see this happen, and there are a lot of screeners who took this job thinking that we can do something good, and many of them have quit, and many of them are talking about quitting now. This is tough. I mean, how are we going to deal with this issue of some explosives that are non-metallic, like plastic explosive, getting onto a plane, and balance it against privacy rights? Is this really that big a problem? Number one, do we need some other technology? Do we need some kind of sniffer technology? Or should we do what, for example, Israel does? And I've been in and out of Israel a lot of times, and I'll tell you, it's just amazing, their security. They do psychographic testing. They don't do body searches. They don't pat you down. Instead, they ask you 5 or 6 questions. And the answers to those questions are designed to elicit really who you are and what you're all about. In the United States, that would be called profiling or something like that. It would probably be politically incorrect. But it seems to me like the way to do it. You do psychographic testing rather than physical testing. Ask people a few tough questions. See how they answer. Everybody say, oh, my privacy. But maybe not. I don't know. We'll see. That's my solution.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's
888-242. Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. Yesterday, labor leaders and activists gathered together at Queens College in New York City for the Labor at the Crossroads Conference.
There is a crisis in America for working people.
Bruce Rayner, general president of Unite Here, spoke as part of a panel discussion on revitalizing the labor movement.
28 million people go to work every day in this country today and live in poverty. Not people unemployed, but people who work. In the last 4 years, George Bush has presided over the loss of 2.9 million manufacturing jobs. More jobs lost in those 4 years than the previous 22 years.
During the noon hour, union members picketed a Verizon wireless store in Midtown Manhattan, highlighting the cell phone carrier's illegal anti-union tactics.
Basically, what Verizon Wireless is doing is attempting to pressure out the union.
Laverne Conley was a Verizon Wireless employee for 2.5 years before she was fired for encouraging her coworkers to fight for collective bargaining rights.
My biggest concern was just a respectable work environment where people came in every day and as long as they were doing a good job, knew they had a job the next day.
The conference continues through today.
Michigan's Democratic governor plans to remove same-sex partner benefits from contracts negotiated with state workers. An aide to Governor Jennifer Granholm says that benefits are being removed because voters passed an amendment on November 2nd that bans gay marriage and similar unions. The contracts will be adopted on December 15th. Granholm aide David Fink says that if the courts resolve the issue of same-sex benefits before the contracts take effect on October 1, 2005, then they could be reinserted. After Granholm spoke at the Democratic National Convention, many characterized her as a rising star in the party.
800 General Motors workers in Linden, New Jersey face an uncertain future as GM ends operations there 2 years earlier than planned. But at least they won't be hurting for wages between now and the originally planned phase-out of plant operations. Because they have income protection built into their contracts, the 800 union workers will get paid 95% of their wages for 48 weeks while on unemployment. After that, they'll collect their full salaries while doing community service work, right up to the September 2007 date when production of the Chevy Blazer and Jimny SUVs was originally set to end. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The Consumer Price Index was up by 0.6% for October, 3.2% higher than October of 2003. Energy costs led the increase in the cost of living for working families, rising 4.2% over a year ago. Food prices are also higher. Many of the necessities working families must buy, including gasoline, food, and heating oil, are all more expensive, and this comes at a time when real worker wages have declined. Inflation for the first 10 months of this year rose at an annual rate of 3.9%, according to the Consumer Price Index.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Are you tired of progressives spending all their energy on defensive struggles where a victory simply maintains the status quo? We are too, and we're doing something about it. At ReclaimDemocracy.org, we're taking the initiative to revoke corporate power and restore citizen authority over corporations to enable genuine progress on the many issues that we all care about. Get involved. Visit us online at ReclaimDemocracy.org or call 406-582-1224.
Why is it that when George W. says he's going to reform something, I instinctively want to grab my money, my liberties, my family, and flee to the woods? For the Bushites, the word reform means deform, to monkey wrench the system so the rich get richer and the rest of us get stooked. Still, there's one system crying out for real reform, the bankruptcy process that corporations are using to stiff their employees, letting CEOs simply walk away from binding contracts on wages, health care, and pensions. At present, the big abusers are United, U.S. Air, Delta, and other major airlines that have been poorly managed and now are being squeezed by their bankers and jet fuel suppliers. Screaming poverty, these airlines have rushed a bankruptcy court, demanding that judges allow them to abrogate legitimate contracts they had negotiated in good faith with their pilots, flight attendants, mechanics, and others. These are loyal, long-time, hard-working employees who already have made concession after concession, giving back billions of dollars that were owed to them. Yet the CEOs are demanding still more, using the federal bankruptcy law as their weapon for this mugging. This one-sided law apparently legalizes end runs to let corporations weasel out of their obligations. What an interesting lesson for all of us who've been taught that a contract is sacrosanct, a legally binding giving of one's word. Here's my question. Why do the CEOs only target the workers for cost-cutting? Why not tell Exxon and the other fuel suppliers, no, we can't pay your gouging prices, so we're abrogating those commitments? Or why not say to the super wealthy bankers, you take some of the pain too? Why do they only pound their workers? This is Jim Hightower saying, I don't know about you, but on my flights, I'd rather have a disgruntled banker or fuel supplier than an angry pilot, flight attendant, or mechanic. It's time to fix the bankruptcy law that has legalized the corporate robbery of workers.
Your oldest has just turned driving age. Time to add them to your policy. So you get in your car, drive down to your insurance company. Hunt for a space, double park, get a parking ticket, get in a fight with the meter maid, get thrown in jail, meet a guy named Wally. Wait a minute. This is just a bad dream. You've got GEICO. You don't have to drive anywhere. You can do all that car insurance stuff online. Oh, that was a close one.
GEICO's customer satisfaction stands at 97%. How would you rate your car insurance company? GEICO. Online at GEICO.com.
It's night. You have heartburn. You want fast relief. Zantac works fast. When first used, Prilosec OTC works not so fast. Zantac works right when you need it.
Hello, relief.
Prilosec's label says it may take 1 to 4 days to fully work. So, what would you choose?
Estimated time of relief, 1 to 4 days.
Prilosec, nah. Zantac's for people who hate to wait, especially at night. Use a directive.
The man who uncovered uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. Following up on the story of the electronic scanners, electronic voting machines, Diane Kay, or no, it's Placidus Roy in our chat room says, I remember using a number 2 pencil on a scan machine test in 1956. We got our test graded correctly. I think maybe your teacher had hacked the machine. Or maybe some really, one of those really kind of super smart computer geeky kids in the class had hacked the machine. That's how they get those grades. Get into the scanners. Could be. I'm not that. I am really not that paranoid. Well, no, I'm not. The Bush administration, this from the Center for American Progress, the Bush administration is pouring hundreds of millions of dollars from taxpayers into programs billed as abstinence-only education that, quote, teach adolescents false and misleading information about reproductive health. You probably heard about this in the news. It was the subject of a Crossfire segment yesterday. I have a larger issue. I think that there's a much larger issue at stake here that nobody is talking about. Nobody is talking about. And it really troubles me, and therefore I'm going to talk about it. First, the small issue. The small issue is that we have these faith-based education programs going on all across the sex education programs going on all across the country that are teaching nonsense to our students. Things that, for example, touching your genitals can produce pregnancy, can result in pregnancy. That masturbation can produce pregnancy. And heterosexual sex, condoms fail to prevent HIV approximately 31% of the time. Hey? I mean, nobody should say condoms are 100% effective against HIV. They're not. But to say that they fail 31% of the time, the problem with these kinds of scare techniques, these scare strategies, saying that the 10% of women who have an abortion become sterile or their next child is likely to be premature, when all the studies show that there's just no correlation whatsoever. They used to have a study out, I remember when this came out a couple of years ago, and it got trumpeted and it was in all the media that women were more likely to have breast cancer if they'd had abortions. Well, it turned out that when you go back and you look at the numbers, you find that the more often a woman breastfeeds, the less likely she is to have breast cancer. It's just a very simple thing. And, of course, women who have abortions rather than having children are not breastfeeding as often as women who are having children and not having abortions. And that was the only correlation. It had nothing to do with the abortion. It had to do with whether or not women had babies. It's a good argument for breastfeeding, but it's not a good argument against abortion. But they tried to make it that. Another one of these programs lists financial support as one of the 5 major needs of women and domestic support as one of the 5 major needs of men. In other words, women want to be taken care of. Men want to be, have their meals made for them or something like that. Another program tells the story of a princess who advises a knight to save her from a dragon using poison. The poison works, but the knight feels ashamed because he needs the help of the princess. He ends up marrying a village maiden only after making sure she knows nothing about poisons. The moral of the story, quote, occasional suggestions and assistance may be all right, but too much of it will lessen a man's confidence or even turn him away from his princess, end quote. Eh? This reminds me of I remember reading my oldest daughter when she was, I don't know, 3, 4, 5 years old, something like that, reading her Snow White, or no, Cinderella. And, everybody knows the Cinderella story, right? As I was a kid, I remember the Disney version of it. But I had never really thought of it as a message in addition to a story. And I remember, this was 25 years ago, I remember after I had read that story to our oldest daughter,
I went out to the kitchen and where Louise was. Oh, gee, that's the woman's place, according to this. Anyway, I can remember it vividly. I remember, you know, we were standing by the sink when we had this conversation. I can remember it to this day. Anyhow, and I said to Louise, I think I have just participated in a multi-century sociological, psychological brainwashing experiment of some kind. And she's like, what are you talking about? And I said, well, you know, I just read Kinder, the story of Cinderella. And in the Cinderella story, the good girl, the beautiful girl, in other words, the girl who is like what we hold up to be what a woman should be or a girl should be, young woman. The good girl is the one who is essentially a maid. She mops the floor. She does all the work. She doesn't ask questions. She does what she's told. She keeps her mouth shut. And the ugly, undesirable women, or girls, or yeah, I don't know how old these, probably 12, 13, 14 years old back then. It was the age that people started looking for partners. In any case, 15. The ugly ones or the undesirable ones were the ones who were trying to get what they want. They had a mission. They had a plan. They were going to try and marry a prince. Right? They were working on it. And therefore, they were the undesirable ones. They had a mission. And then Cinderella goes to this ball, and she dances with this guy, the prince. And this guy is such a putz. He dances with her for a couple of hours, and he can't remember what she looks like. He can only remember what her feet look like. This is the story of a foot fetishist. But really, beyond that, I mean, the really bizarre part of the story is that the message that is being given to you, to our young children, to particularly to the little girls in our society, is that the way to success is to marry a prince. The way to success is through a man, and not just a man, but a well-off man. And, of course, that's the stereotype that is being promoted in one of these, what are promoted as sex education stories, where they talk about the five major needs of women include financial support, and the five major needs of men include domestic support, and blah-de-blah-de-blah, and the story, you know. So there's this. There's the fact that there has been absolutely no science at all demonstrating that these programs actually reduce pregnancies or reduce abortions or reduce sexual activity. And in fact, there have been some studies indicating that they are that children who go through these programs, as opposed to programs where they actually talk about here's what sex is, here's how it works, here's what a condom is, here's how what birth control pills are, and by the way, don't do this until you're either in a really serious relationship or married. I mean, let's say married, ideally. In other words, you can have an abstinence message and give people information. And that when those kinds of programs are done, you actually see a decrease in teenage pregnancies. You see a decrease in teenage abortion rates. You see a decrease in sexually transmitted diseases. But not these programs. Okay, so that's the small battle that's going on. The small battle is whether all these abstinence-only programs that you and I are spending hundreds of millions of our tax dollars for are supplying our children with nonsense or supplying them with a values system that we may not all agree with. That is, women should be subservient to men and dependent upon men. Or that they are providing, you know, that our money is being wasted, basically. That we're not seeing a reduction in the abortion rate or the teenage pregnancy rate as a result of this. That's one argument. And, of course, a piece of that, too, is the they lied to me part of it. I mean, I knew people. When I was in college, I knew some heroin addicts who I remember one said to me one time, you know, they told me that if I smoked pot, they had told him that if he had smoked pot, he would become addicted, and that would be the end of that. And he smoked pot, and he didn't get addicted.
And he said, so at that point, he knew that they had lied. So he figured, you know, they said, if you shoot heroin, you'll get addicted. He figured, another lie. Well, that one was true. So this is the problem. You can't tell people lies to try and accomplish a greater truth. I mean, the greater truth, of course, is that promiscuity does promote the transmission of sexually transmitted diseases. It does cause teenage pregnancy. It does, or all kinds of pregnancies. It, you know, it does have negative side effects, including emotional negative side effects. And for that matter, having an abortion has emotional negative side effects. I mean, all of these things, that's true. But that doesn't mean that you have to lie to people to convince them of that truth. Then you just lose credibility, and the truth may get lost. But here's the bigger issue. The bigger issue is that many of these programs around the country are being taught by groups that are affiliated with religious organizations. Ever since George W. Bush came into office and announced his faith-based initiative program, Reverend Moon, the Jerry Falwell, Pat Robertson, all of these guys, they have been falling all over themselves to set up nonprofit educational, 501c3 educational groups to provide services to schools to teach these kinds of classes, or to publish textbooks, or to educate teachers, or to hold seminars, or to do workshops, whatever. This has become a major growth industry for the religious right in the United States. And my problem with that is not... Well, there's two problems with that, and there's a small problem and a large problem. The small problem is that the religious right is having increasingly greater influence on government. I don't think the religious right, I don't think the religious left, I don't think the atheists, I don't think the Catholics, I don't think the Moonies, I don't think any of them should have undue influence. You know, individuals should have influence on government. That's what government is supposed to represent. We the people, you and me, individuals. And we can represent our religious views and say, hey, I'd like to have that. But institutions, there I have a problem. But the bigger problem is the impact, in my opinion, the bigger problem, the thing I'm really worried about with this, is the impact of this on the religious institutions themselves. And that is the thing that nobody is talking about. And that was the big debate that the founders had in 1787. That was the huge debate that nobody, for some reason, it's just completely not even on the radar screen. How much damage is done to a church or synagogue or congregation or whatever? How much damage is done to an organized religion by giving it access to the power and wealth of government? Stick around. 20 minutes past the hour is the Tom Hartman program. You're in the Truth Arena.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
If it weren't for In These Times, I'd be a man without a country, says author Kurt Vonnegut. For more than 27 years, the progressive news magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication the scholar and activist Cornel West calls the most creative and challenging news magazine of the American left.
In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Turn to In These Times for stories on civil liberties, the environment, labor, feminism, and much more. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich put it this way: to people who say they are sick of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. That's 1-800-827-0270.
No, no, you may not hang at the park. Yes, even if all your friends are there. Go to Mrs. Feldman's till I'm home from work.
Keeping tabs on your kid after school isn't easy.
Yes, tomorrow too.
But if you don't, she's more likely to do drugs.
No, I am not easier on your brother.
Do it. It'll always be worth it. Parents, the anti-drug. To learn more, call 1-800-788-2800 or visit theantidrug.com. Sponsored by the ONDCP and the Partnership for Drug-Free America.
You've heard his story a thousand times. A troubled youth runs away from home, becomes a huge international superstar. But this is not the story of a rock star.
Ladies and gentlemen, Ben Franklin!
It's the story of Ben Franklin, patriot, inventor, and, yes, ladies' man. Ben Franklin, as only the History Channel can bring you. Catch the lightning this Sunday at 9, 8 Central.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
You know, some things in life are bad. They can really make you mad. And other things just make you swear and curse.
Yeah, like the last election.
When you're chewing on life's gristle, don't grumble, give a whistle. And this'll help things turn out for the best. And always look on the bright side of life.
There you go. You know, I have to say, if you want to remain psychologically healthy throughout your life, there are two things that you must cultivate. The first is gratitude, and the second is forgiveness. Those have to be the very top of the pile. It's got to be there. It's got to be part of life. And there's just no shortage of good, solid psychological studies indicating that. By the way, several of the women in the chat room are taking me to task for saying that abortion has negative emotional consequences. My experience is that some women have abortions and it's just no big deal. And I've known a couple of women who have had regrets after the fact it's haunted them. So, you know, the point is that I don't think that abortion personally, I mean, this is just my own personal opinion for what it's worth. I don't think that it's something that should be considered a casual decision. And frankly, I've never known anybody who had an abortion who took it as a casual decision. In every case, it was a very difficult, very agonizing decision, the few that I've known of. And, you know, there may be people who casually have abortions. I have a hard time, frankly, believing that that's the majority. But, you know, Maybe I'm misinformed. But anyhow, that wasn't the point. The point was that the sex education that is being provided by these religious organizations is dysfunctional, and that the religious organizations are getting the money from you and me, from our tax dollars, and that is not only a violation of the founders' intent, but ultimately, I think, bad for the religious organizations themselves. They should be doing their own thing in their own space, in their own way, not coming into our schools and saying, here we are to tell you how to be. Right? If you want that, go to church, which I encourage. 27 minutes past the hour, 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. And I want to share with you some information about what happens when churches get power. We'll get to that in just a second. But right now, Ed in California is on the line. Ed, welcome to the program. How are you today?
Well,
what's up?
Thank you. Fair to partly cloudy. Thank you.
Okay.
The problem is that most people, and I know you're going to disagree with me, that this country wasn't founded on religious freedom. It was founded on one set of religious beliefs. I believe that the people who lived here had a religion. I believe that you quoted yesterday the Quakers weren't allowed off the boats.
Yeah, in Virginia, in the state of Virginia.
It's never
yeah.
been a religious freedom. It's just something that's been said to us, and we repeat it blindly.
Yeah. Well, the other thing that's interesting is that when the Puritans first came, the first colony there in Jamestown, it was actually founded on economics. They had 5 years to turn a profit for the corporation that had funded them. They came over. The Mayflower was a ship owned by the British East India Company, and they had 5 years to show a profit.
They didn't come for religious freedom. They came for economy.
They came. It wasn't so much that. It was really a mixture of the two. They came because their religion was not, there was an official religion in England, and so all the other religions were more or less oppressed. And that's very real. But they were also in search of better economic opportunity. There was word that there was gold in the New World. The East India Company was willing to finance the thing to see if they could make it happen. Jamestown was named after that's Plymouth Colony. It's a different thing, but Jamestown, the first colony, was named after King James, who was the major stockholder in the East India Company. So you're right.
My family came here in the 1630s, and the other half was born here.
Yeah.
So they were both religious.
In other words, Native Americans had a religion too, and
sure do.
Yeah, it wasn't about religious freedom so much as about we have a religion. Damn it,
you're going to like it.
Yeah, there you go. And that was certainly the position that the Pilgrims, the Puritans, the Quakers, that they all took. And Ben Franklin in his autobiography just rants about that. It's just incredible. Thanks for the call, Ed. 29 minutes past the hour.
Do you have a child with ADHD who is misunderstood, unhappy, and dissatisfied with school? Are you ready for an educational change and for your child to like school again? Consider The Hunter School, a residential K-8 school specializing in the education of children with ADHD, hunters in a farmer's world. Hunter School appreciates and honors the uniqueness of each student while building upon his inherent strengths and abilities. For more information, find us on the web at hunterschool.org.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. Yesterday, labor leaders and activists gathered together at Queens College in New York City for the Labor at the Crossroads Conference.
There is a crisis in America for working people.
Bruce Rayner, general president of Unite Here, spoke as part of a panel discussion on revitalizing the labor movement.
28 million people go to work every day in this country today and live in poverty. Not people unemployed, but people who work. In the last 4 years, George Bush has presided over the loss of 2.9 million manufacturing jobs, more jobs lost in those 4 years than the previous 22 years.
During the noon hour, union members picketed a Verizon wireless store in Midtown Manhattan, highlighting the cell phone carrier's illegal anti-union tactics.
Basically, what Verizon Wireless is doing is attempting to pressure out the union.
Laverne Conley was a Verizon Wireless employee for 2.5 years before she was fired for encouraging her coworkers to fight for collective bargaining rights.
My biggest concern was just a respectable work environment where people came in every day and as long as they were doing a good job, knew they had a job the next day.
The conference continues through today.
Michigan's Democratic governor plans to remove same-sex partner benefits from contracts negotiated with state workers. An aide to Governor Jennifer Granholm says that benefits are being removed because voters passed an amendment on November 2nd that bans gay marriage and similar unions. The contracts will be adopted on December 15th. Granholm aide David Fink says that if the courts resolve the issue of same-sex benefits before the contracts take effect on October 1, 2005, then they could be reinserted. After Granholm spoke at the Democratic National Convention, many characterized her as a rising star in the party.
800 General Motors workers in Linden, New Jersey face an uncertain future as GM ends operations there 2 years earlier than planned. But at least they won't be hurting for wages between now and the originally planned phase-out of plant operations. Because they have income protection built into their contracts, the 800 union workers will get paid 95% of their wages for 48 weeks while on unemployment. After that, they'll collect their full salaries while doing community service work, right up to the September 2007 date when production of the Chevy Blazer and Jimny SUVs was originally set to end. Here's today's Dow Bob report. The consumer price index was up by 0.6% for October, 3.2% higher than October of 2003. Energy costs led the increase in the cost of living for working families, rising 4.2% over a year ago. Food prices are also higher. Many of the necessities working families must buy, including gasoline, food, and heating oil, are all more expensive, and this comes at a time when real worker wages have declined. Inflation for the first 10 months of this year rose at an annual rate of 3.9%, according to the consumer price index.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Oh, what a crack. 27 and a half minutes before the hour. Anthony Scalia. Now, here's the question. Is it good for religion when religion has access to power, to the power of government, to the wealth and power of government? And Anthony Scalia, the man who is most likely going to be the next Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, I think it's probably fairly safe to assume that Rehnquist, within a year or so anyway, will probably retire and may be already on his way out. I'm sure most Americans wish him well, but he's going through a very, very difficult health crisis apparently right now. And here's so Scalia goes to the oldest synagogue, the oldest Jewish synagogue in the United States, and gives a speech in which he suggests that the separation of church and state is a bad thing. He points out that in Europe, religion-neutral leaders almost never publicly use the word God. See, if a political leader in Europe said, you know, God bless you, or God has ordained our nation, the great nation of Denmark, or Switzerland or whatever, you know, people would go, what happened to him? Now, everybody may believe, it's fine with people if somebody believes that, but in your official capacity, you don't talk about religion, you talk about your job. You're hired to help run this government. You're not hired to be our preacher. We go to church on Sunday to hear our preacher, or synagogue on Saturday, or temple on Friday, or whatever. So anyhow, Scalia points out that there's this European tradition of separation of church and state. And then he goes on to say,
And I'm quoting from an Associated Press story, November 23rd, 2004. He says, did it turn out that by reason of the separation of church and state, the Jews were safer in Europe than they were in the United States of America? I don't think so. In other words, the Holocaust was the result of a separation of church and state, according to Scalia. Now, obviously, this guy has not bothered to read history. And I'm just frankly amazed by this, because he was born in 1936. He was, you know, old enough. It was 1945, 1946, 1947. You know, Time magazine, Look magazine, all those, they were all full of all the pictures, the horrors coming out of Germany after World War II. For years after World War II. He was 10, 11, 12 years old. He's old enough to have seen that stuff. And certainly they were studying it in high school when he was a student. And if everything else had failed, I mean, his son, the priest, he's got eight kids, and one of his sons is a priest. He should have been able to tell him this stuff. It wasn't the separation of church and state in Germany that helped make the Holocaust happen. It was the merging of church and state. Now, those who were part of the official Lutheran, or what was just then called the German Protestant Church, which was formed on July 14th, as I recall, 1933. Those who were July 14th, 1933. Those who were members of that church may have thought that the merging of church and state was good because it gave them access to money and power that they hadn't had before. But the Catholics didn't think it was a good idea. And for sure, the Jews didn't think it was a good idea. The Gypsies didn't think it was a good idea. I mean, all the other religions, they didn't think it was a good idea. And ultimately, they paid the highest price for this. When Hitler signed this decree on the 14th of July, 1933, merging church and state, he created the Protestant Church of the Third Reich. And the legislation that he signed, the decree concerning the Constitution of the German Protestant Church, 14 July 1933, established a position of head bishop, Reich bishop, for the new church. And a fellow by the name of Ludwig Müller was appointed the Reich bishop. He was a Lutheran minister. He was the head of the church until he committed suicide at the end of the war. And if he, and the horrors that were committed by that church, by Germans in the name of God, in the name of Christ, are no secret, except apparently to Antonin Scalia. James Madison discussed this, got into this. In a July 10th, 1822 letter to Edward Livingston, he said, "We are teaching the world the great truth that governments can do better without kings and nobles than with them. The merit will be doubled by the other lesson, religion flourishes in greater purity without than with the aid of governments." See, this is the big thing. The British for hundreds of years have been saying that there had to be a Church of England. This was King Henry VIII, was it? It was his argument that there had to be a state-sponsored church, otherwise nobody would ever go to church and it would die away. And there were people in the United States who made that argument right up till 1787 when the Constitution was ratified. And Madison says, nope, that ain't the case. In fact, churches will do better if they don't get money from the state, and if they don't have influence on the state, and if the state doesn't have influence over them, which it would have when it starts giving them money, as it is now. This is why James Madison, as President of the United States, on February 21st, 1811, vetoed a bill before Congress to give money to a church in Washington, D.C. to care for the poor in that city. He said it would create a legal precedent, what's called a legal agency, a legal precedent, that would break down the wall of the separation of church and state that the founders had created there. He was just absolutely unambiguous about it. On March 18, 1823, he wrote, "The settled opinion here is that religion is essentially distinct from civil government and exempt from its cognizance, that a connection between them is injurious to both."
Why isn't there any discussion in the mainstream media, in the press, whatever? Even in right-wing talk shows, you would think, you know, if they want to be intellectually and morally honest, this should be on the table. What is the impact on religion of government funding it? Does it not corrupt it? Certainly James Madison, I can give you 30 quotes. I'm not going to bore you with them all. He absolutely believed that that was the case. And again, Scalia says the separation of church and state in Europe led to the Holocaust. Nonsense. The merging of church and state in Europe led to the Holocaust. On the 60th anniversary of the Jedwabne massacre in Poland, President of Poland said, "I apologize on my own behalf and on behalf of those Poles whose consciences have been stirred by that crime. I would say there is no country in the former East Bloc with a tighter relation between church and state. I would dare say there is no state in Europe, maybe Ireland, where religious leaders have as much influence over policymaking as they do in Poland." What did they do? They slaughtered the Jews. During World War II, Slovakia was ruled as a German satellite by Father Tiso, a Catholic priest. Under his rule, 75% of Slovak Jews were deported to concentration camps. This, by the way, from Shea. I don't know if he wants me to give his last name, but thanks, Shea, for the... He sent me some great, great quotes here, great clips here. In Bettner's book, Roman Catholicism, he writes of the quote, "Catholic state of Croatia, which was formed after the Second World War." Pavlik was the minister of was the president or the prime minister. The minister of religion was a fellow by the name of Andrija Aturović, another Roman Catholic. Then began a war of suppression or extermination of all Serbs and Jews. Nearly 70,000 of the 80,000 Jews in the new state were killed or forced to flee, their property confiscated. On May 1941, after innumerable massacres had been committed, Pavelić went to Rome and was received by Pope Pius XII, and on the same occasion signed a treaty with Mussolini. Pope Pius XII, you'll remember, is the fellow who declared that April 20th, or was it March 20th, one or the other, I get them mixed up, Hitler's birthday, should be henceforth and forevermore an international day of celebration. Hitler's birthday, an official Catholic holiday, declared by Pope Pius XII. April 20th. I suspect that's been repealed since then. I'm not sure exactly when. So this in my mind, this is people talk about this abstinence-only education, and it's a bunch of nonsense, and they're teaching kids lies, and they're scaring kids unnecessarily, and it doesn't actually reduce, sexual behavior, and they're creating sexual stereotypes about men, women, and gays. And all of that is true, but the worst part of it is that most of it is being done by nonprofit groups that are the spinoffs of churches with specific religious agendas who are taking money from the state. And that is going to corrupt the churches. And that's a danger. It's a danger not just to the state and not just to democracy, but also to religion. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. And Enrique in Santa Fe on the line. Hey, Enrique. How are you?
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Just great. Great to hear from you.
Yeah. Oh, it's good to hear you. It's very difficult, I think, to deal in the new environment after the election when we're talking so much about this whole religious outlook and having it sort of take over our government.
Yeah.
And, you know, how do you combat that? And I appreciated, what you've just been saying now, some of these facts and... if we could, start writing letters to the editor, I think outlining some of the things that you're saying.
Yeah, the United States is a secular democracy. It's not it's not a theocracy.
Yeah.
I wrote about this. This is what I was just sharing with you. Most of it came from an article that I wrote that I put up on commondreams.org yesterday, if you want to
see it. Oh, okay. Well, that's great.
And also mailed out to our mailing list. But this is a, and here's the weird thing, Enrique. The press is all, you know, all gaga about this mythology that George Bush won because the religious right turned out in huge numbers. The percentage, and they did. There were more religious right people voting for George Bush than there had been 4 years earlier. But there were also more atheists voting for George Bush than there had been 4 years. There was more everybody voting for George Bush than there had been 4 years earlier. And as a percentage of the votes, the religious vote didn't change. It was about 15%. It didn't change, the fundamentalist vote. The only group, the only demographic group, psychographic group, however you define it, the only group, measurable group, that increased as a percentage of the vote for George Bush was that of people making over $100,000 a year. Those are the people who put George Bush into office, to the extent that he was put into office. And why the media completely ignores that fact and instead goes off on this whole religion thing and Jerry Falwell on Crossfire and all, I mean, is beyond me, other than the fact that you've got all these conservative religious groups cranking out press releases saying, we did it, it's all our, you know, we take the blame or we take the credit and stirring up publicity for themselves. Yeah. But is that what you called about?
Well, and I actually had a question.
Mm-hmm.
You had talked, and it's been probably a month ago or so, mm-hmm. about Roe versus Wade.
Right.
And how that was a case, really, of women's rights.
Yes.
And not anything really about abortion. And you gave citations of cases back to the 1880s where women were considered to be sort of the property of men.
It was 1873. It was Bradwell versus State. Sarah Bradwell versus the State of Illinois, and Bradwell versus the State of Illinois. And in that case, she was a lawyer and she wanted to practice law, and she took this case to the Supreme Court because this judge told her that she couldn't practice law in his courtroom because she was a woman and she should be home, you know, caring for some man. And the Supreme Court ruled that the appropriate role of a woman was in the home, and that women derived their rights through their husbands and fathers or brothers. And the Roe v. Wade was about abortion. I mean, that was the thing that turned it. But really, the key element of Roe v. Wade, and this is why everybody talks about the right to privacy, was, do women have the same rights as men under the Bill of Rights, under the Constitution? Do they have a Fourth Amendment right to privacy the same as men do? And the court finally ruled after 100 years, literally 100 years, that yes, they do, and in effect overturned Bradwell versus State.
Mm-hmm. Have you written about that?
Yes. Yes, I have. If you go to tomhartman.com and you click on Articles on Democracy, you'll find. And actually, there's a piece about that in my book on equal protection as well.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Well, thank you.
Sure. Good luck. Thanks for the call. Good to hear from you, Enrique. I appreciate the call. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Deadly hot summers to become the norm. This being reported now in Europe. They're very concerned. You know, 35,000 people died in Europe last year in the heat waves that they had. They had these absolutely abnormally hot summers, and there have been several of them in the last few years. Oxford University has done the computer modeling on this thing, and they found that the extra heat that made the summer of 2003 the hottest in 500 years was largely the result of human influences such as the burning of fossil fuels. This I'm quoting from this article in The Independent. Greenhouse gases have at least doubled the risk of this happening. The study published in the journal Nature calculates that human influence is to blame for 75% of the increased risk. At the rate at which the climate is changing, the scientists estimated that by the 2040s, more than half of all summers will be warmer than last year, when 35,000 people in Europe died from heat stroke. And this is a problem for Europe. The problem here, we have the same thing here. We have fires and floods. And, of course, they're having that same problem in Australia. Last time I was in Australia, on the weather forecast, they were talking about, well, global warming is going to make it drier over here. It sure did. 10 minutes before the hour.
Bonjour. My name is Véronique Raskin. I founded the Organic Wine Company 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious. When turned into wine, you can really taste the difference with every sip. So our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you three of my favorite organically grown French wines at half off the regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. Isn't that magnifique? I think so. If you don't share my enthusiasm, I'll gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me at 1-888-ECO-WINE. ECOWINE. Au revoir.
Real novelists don't go to graduate school, they go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small-town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor. Palasek's books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
For thousands of years, millions of people have trusted the healing power of herbs. Healing Hollers, an earth-based business in the southern Ozarks, has formulated medical herbal salves proven effective in promoting healing and providing relief for many skin conditions, including a healing salve with antiseptic and antibacterial properties to treat cuts, burns, scalds, and wounds, an antifungal salve safe and effective for athlete's foot, ringworm, nail, and other fungal infections, and a soothing calendula salve to reduce pain and inflammation from dry skin, eczema, and rashes, including diaper rash. These salves contain only herbs and roots organically grown or ethically wildcrafted natural oils and beeswax from the Ozarks. To learn more about these salves and other natural products from Healing Hollers, go to www.healing-hollers.com. That's www.healing-hollers.com.
This is a WIN feature story. I'm Sarah Turner. Picket lines continue in Hannibal, Ohio, despite 17 arrests as aluminum manufacturer Ormit filed for bankruptcy and is seeking to void the steelworkers' labor agreements and impose new ones.
Right now, we're in a fight for health care and pensions. You know, it's going on across the country. Every company you hear, you know, they want them to pay for their health care. They want them to pay, lose their pensions. They're trying to take our pensions and health care from our retirees.
Jeremy Parker is the vice president of Ohio USWA Local 5724, representing half of the 1,300 union workers at the reduction plant and rolling mill.
Now, this is a fight that's not only going on right here at Ormet. It's nationwide. Every time you open the paper, somebody's taking a pension. You know, we're just standing up to them and saying, listen, if you don't want to pay us what we're worth and what our retirees have worked their lifetime for, then there's not going to be an Ormet.
Working without a contract since August 30th, Ormet employees decided to conduct a work stoppage November 22nd.
The company has took their secretarial staff, their, you know, administrative staff down into the plant. They have been doing the jobs that, you know, we left, which includes, you know, part room utility work, setting carbon. We're told that they're on a 12-hour shift in there, and then they're, once they get done with that shift, they go back on the hill, do their duties there, and then sleep somewhere in between. There's like 300 of them trying to, you know, do a jobs that 1,300 of us was in there doing.
Parker says Ormet's closure would do irreparable damage to Monroe County, where it's the largest tax contributor and the largest employer.
If them plants go down, you know, Monroe County turns into a dust bowl. You know, there's not a lot of other industrial in this county. You've got a lot of little businesses. You know, these mom-and-pop stores, they depend on us every day. You know, we are their customers.
The union is waiting to hear from a bankruptcy court judge on her plans for reorganization. With the Workers Independent News Service, I'm Sarah Turner.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
Welcome back to the True People's Radio, the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Our telephone number, 1-866-889-8894, and Alan in Mississippi on the line. Hey, Alan, where in Mississippi are you?
I'm on I-20, pretty close to Meridian.
Ah, on the road.
Yeah, on the road.
Yeah. So what's
I
up?
I was listening to you at a truck stop earlier, the radiopower.org.
Uh-huh.
But now I'm on the road.
Yep.
I've got a question about unions. There's a lot of truckers out here who would like to be members of the union. Would you say the first start is to go into the website of the union and join the union that way?
Well, I'm not sure that you can. I frankly don't know the details of how that works. If it's possible for somebody to join a union if they're not part of an organization that is being unionized. But I would encourage you to call as a truck driver. I would encourage you to call a Teamsters union, which represents truck drivers generally, and ask them. You know, what can you do? You know, how can you get involved with the Teamsters? How can you get the Teamsters involved with what you're doing? And the AFL-CIO's website also has a lot of good information on it. But specifically as a truck driver, I think the Teamsters is your union. So, I would contact them. And they probably have a local chapter. What state do you live in, Alan?
Alabama.
I would be really surprised if there wasn't a statewide Teamsters office there. And in Alabama, and I would bet in 3 minutes with a good Google search on the web, you could track it down. So
yeah, I like to support them either way.
Yeah. Now, why do you want to be a member of a union?
Because I feel like they would look at my interests.
There you go. There
and
you
we
go.
Work in groups, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, this is the great question. I mean, if corporations can band together with as chambers of commerce or as lobbying groups or as trade organizations or even as a corporation itself, which is a bunch of people banding together to do business, if they can organize, why can't labor? We really have to have that balance. The balance of power ultimately is what it comes down to. The balance of power between labor and management, or between labor and capital, in order to have a workplace that's fair and equitable. Otherwise, we just end up with a very few number of very rich people and a very large number of very terrified workers. We go back to the world that Dickens characterized in A Christmas Carol. Alan, thanks for the call. Good luck. Let me know. Call me back and tell me what happens when you get a hold of the Teamsters, would you?
Okay,
good. I appreciate it. It's the Tom Hartman Program. Thanks to Louise for producing our program today, to Ira for engineering it, to Brad for our music, to Shelby for streaming us around the planet, to Ben for our archives at whiterosesociety.org, Mike Toth for our archives at tomhartman.com. Thanks to the folks in our chat room. Thanks to Jay Mueller, Jay, for coming up with our theme music. Much appreciated. And thank you to you for listening today. Hope you have a great weekend. TGIF, Shabbat Shalom. Have a great one. We'll see you next week.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
This is Veronique Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug, the phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the business my target audience, people who are conscious and responsible and try to do the right thing and try to think for themselves. I would encourage anyone to advertise on the Tom Hartman Show, absolutely, without question, whether that be on the national level or the local level, and you will absolutely get results. The way you can learn more about our imported organically grown wines from France is by calling us. The phone number is 1-888-ECO-WINE, or you can visit our site at
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.